All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. It is 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. You request the bumps that we play coming back from the news and commercials and stuff. And we have a theme each morning. Today is Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to have musician Bill Grady in with us. He's hosting a record release party for his new album, Nothing Runs Free. And that will be on Thursday, November 8th at Martyrs. He's a terrific musician and a great guitarist and all-around very talented guy. And we'll have him in to hear some of his new music and talk music in general with Bill. That's coming up. We also have, as I mentioned to Rich and Jim and Dave, we have some meaty facts about McDonald's McRib. The McRib is back. We'll talk about that. How about 25 recipes that no one makes anymore but should? And a defunct burger chain that invented much of what we all love about fast food. So we got some food stuff to talk about. Probably do a little Halloween stuff. Tomorrow is Halloween, and we will have our 21st annual Halloween Spooktacular. My future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo from Ash vs. Evil Dead, is going to join us. And we'll celebrate Halloween, and we'll play some Halloween music and talk about movies and books and things that scare us, and celebrate Halloween in general and have a good time. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Wednesday for Halloween. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text anytime you want to jump in. Also, 2 for Tuesday requests, get those in. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. You can also subscribe to our podcasts, which are free and they're fun. And every single second of every single show is podcast. So you can go to iTunes or where you get your podcasts, subscribe. It's free and they will automatically be sent to your device and you can listen at your leisure, bro, to our podcast. Check out the podcast at WGNRadio.com. We have a ton of people who listen to our podcast. We thank you for that. So let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I saw Suspiria.
And?
I loved it.
All right. Must consternation in the hallway.
I loved it. Yes. It's a total 180 for me. I was not looking forward to this movie. As time went by, though, reviews started to come in, and I started to see a couple of scenes and new trailers. I was like, okay, this might be an interesting take on it. Let me just say this. This is not going to play well in Skokie. That's all I'm saying. It's a 2.5 hour, insanely bloody, gory, loaded with nudity and insane stories and makeup and blood and guts. And it's an art house movie. It's 2.5 hour art house movie. And it's bat crap crazy. That's all I'm saying. And I'm telling you, walkouts will happen. But I thought it was great. I thought it was great. So it comes out Friday. And so I sacrificed a little sleep. I might be loopy. I think I'm going to be loopy.
Yeah.
Because this was a 2.5 hour movie that I saw earlier. And so, you know, and it took a lot out of me, too, because I was, like, drained when it was over. Anyway, so.
Stay tuned, everybody.
Surprisingly terrific movie, actually. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
How are you, buddy?
Doing pretty good.
Oh, man, yeah. All right, so we're all set. Yes, Vic?
I was just going to say, I did not realize that was Svengoolie in the doing the show.
You didn't?
No.
That's Rich. It's my main man, Sven.
Well, I've never seen him...
without makeup.
No.
Ah, so, okay. That was cool. That was fun having him and Jim on. Yeah, that was great. They're awesome. They're the best. So, well, that was fun having that be my lead-in this morning. I thought that was pretty great. Well, Vic's in the newsroom. Dan is producing. We're all here till 5 a.m., and we are going to break right now, and then we're going to welcome a very, very talented musician named Bill Grady live in studio. Welcome Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on the 18th floor above downtown Chicago. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And that music that you just heard was by musician Bill Grady. He is hosting a record release party for his new album, Nothing Runs Free. And that's next Thursday, the 8th of November. It's happening at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln. So this new album is being released, and we're going to talk with Bill right now, and then hear some hear a couple of songs off of that new album. And we welcome Bill back to the show. Bill, welcome back, man.
Thank you so much. Great to see you again,
good
bud.
Good to see you too, buddy. How you been?
I've been great. It's been a busy summer.
Yeah. Well, was the last time you were here? Was it for the Allman Brothers?
It was last August.
Yeah, that was about a year ago. A year ago. Yeah.
Lots happened between
then and then. So, and you've done other shows with Great Moments in Vinyl too, because Great
have.
Moments in Vinyl is our good friend Lindsey Cochran.
Absolutely.
Who gathers together some of the best musicians in the city, and they do tributes to great albums and great bands. And so how many have you done with them?
So we've done two different artists. We did Pink Floyd back on, I think, Friday of Memorial Day weekend, somewhere around there. And I think we did Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, dream come true.
Yeah.
You know, like a must. And then the other one that we did is we did the first two Jimi Hendrix Experience albums.
Oh, wow.
We did Are You Experienced and Access Bold as Love. And we've actually done that a couple times now, most recently at City Winery, just about a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah, Lindsey keeps us up to date on all of his stuff, and so, well, first of all, let's get your background. Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Northbrook.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this, you know, pretty standard protocol, you know, of getting to, you know, do the suburban thing, and then you finally make your way to the city and realize this is where all the cool people are. This is where the venues are.
When did you start playing music? Was it guitar right away?
You know, I started playing piano when I was 7 years old. My older sister, we had went to a music store where you buy lessons in a set of 10, and 8 lessons in, decided she didn't want to do it anymore. So me at 7 years old was dragged to piano lessons, which is something I saw in cartoons. So I was kicking and screaming like, right, this is the end of the world.
Right.
and it was. It was not an awesome time, but the more years that went by, it set up a foundation for when I did get to pick up the guitar around 13, 14 years old. You know what a note is, and you know what a chord is, and you are aware that you should practice. It was around that time where I decided to actually do the practicing, and things started to fall into line. Thank goodness.
And the switch over to guitar was smooth.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was one of those things that I took piano lessons for a long time, and to this day cannot really work much on the keyboard.
Is that right?
Yeah, I can kind of play.
Why is that? What do you think it is?
You know, I think people are just designed to do certain things, and you just can't do it all. Like I also played trombone for a long time, and that was something that kind of came naturally, which seems like the most unnatural instrument in the world,
but
that came together. And then piano, I don't know if it's the independence of the left hand doing something and the right hand doing something, but when I picked up the guitar, so, you know, you fret this one string, and then you also hit the same string that you're fretting. I go, all right,
I got this. Yeah, that I can do. That I can do. And so you started playing guitar at also a very young age. I mean, if you started playing piano at like 7.
Yeah, I started playing guitar at 13.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely a little further down the road, and definitely had my wits about me a little bit better than I did, you know, than back in the cartoon days. But when I started taking it, I wasn't, you know, I liked it, but I wasn't really that into it. Which really worked out in my favor, because I just did everything that my teacher told me to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went through the book and just, you know, do each exercise 4 times, and then, you know, that's your practice for the day. As opposed to 2 lessons in, like, all right, Metallica time.
Right.
which happens. And I saw people my age back in the day that were doing that, 2 lessons in and doing, you know, overreaching. And now I have students that are doing that to me, and I go, no, no, no.
Yeah.
Stick with those exercises and we can talk.
How long you been teaching?
I've been teaching since I was 17. That was kind of my side hustle in high school. And, you know, if you have a driver's license and some, you know, people younger than you that are willing to, you know, sit still for 30 minutes, it can be a really good time. And I love teaching. I absolutely adore it. And I'm lucky that I do it on my own. So I go house to house and really can kind of pick and choose who I, you know, get to help out.
Yeah. And are they mostly younger?
You know, they're actually, most of my students are adults. It didn't really happen that way intentionally, but... because it did, I've been able to work with some people. Like, I have some, I play in a lot of Grateful Dead type groups, like out in the suburbs. So I absolutely love the jam band thing. So I'll meet some guys at these shows, you know, 40, 50 years old. They're like, yeah, I love the Grateful Dead. I can kind of play guitar. I just saw you and you can play guitar and you know the Grateful Dead. Can you come over to my house to teach me guitar?
Yeah.
I'm like, absolutely.
Is that how you find a lot of the people that you... Do you have a website for the...
You know, BillGradyMusic.com is where I keep a lot of my music and a lot of my just various gigs and stuff going on.
Yeah.
I have a little blurb up there about teaching, but it's kind of something that, you know, I gig so much. I play around 160 gigs a year.
Jeez.
So I know, right? I did the math the other day and I was like, oh, we need to.
Is this throughout the whole Midwest or?
Yeah. You know, I tour with a band called Cornmeal. I'm a really great bluegrass jam band that within the last year we made our way out to Rochester and a bunch of shows in Colorado and some shows in Michigan and Wisconsin. And then I played a wedding in Atlanta last year. So it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Some gigs down in Texas.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's in Chicago.
Right.
Which is why I'm excited to be able to finally release my music in town.
You got you got a new album and it's called Nothing Runs Free. Tell me about it.
So I started all of the songs on this record. It's not necessarily your traditional kind of guitar record. I love playing electric guitar and you know, like we were talking about, Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix, Allman Brothers, Grateful Dead,
yeah.
You know, all of that stuff was kind of my idea of guitar growing up. The more that I got into Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan and things like that, the further back down kind of the blues road I went, and I started learning about, you know, a lot of the early Chicago blues guys, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf,
yeah.
And kind of where all of this stuff came from. And I just fell in love with slide guitar. And that was the thing that really spoke to me, just kind of knocked me out and said, this is a path really worth pursuing, which at music school is not necessarily what you go there for. You know, a lot of people go, I went to Berklee College of Music. A lot of people go there to learn jazz and bebop and maybe some shred metal, you know, things that you really need to dig deep for.
Right.
And it was great because they had some programs where you could learn, you know, Delta blues and slide blues and B.B. King and everything like that.
Yeah.
But you really kind of had to take what they gave you and push it, you know, to the limit, whether it was going out and gigging or jamming with people or being from Chicago. Doesn't hurt either.
No, it doesn't. You're in the right city for that kind of music.
That's what everyone keeps telling me. So when I first started writing these tunes, I basically write... all of my songs, for those of you guitar players out there listening, I write all my songs on this record in open tuning, which is what a lot of the old school blues guys do, as well as guys like Derek Trucks and Keith Richards from the Stones. And it just opens up a lot of different sonic possibilities. So I wrote these tunes for solo open tune guitar because I didn't have a car and I didn't have a band. And in Boston, where I went to school, there weren't a lot of places to play. So it was really just an adapt or die type of thing. I'm just like, yeah, I need to go gig and sing and play. And if I don't have people to do it with me, I'm going to have to find a way around it.
Right.
So I wrote a lot of these intentionally to be played solo, kind of like the old school blues guys did. And the more time that went by, the more I realized we actually have some solid product here.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it wasn't necessarily, you know, shreddy John Mayer blues stuff, which is kind of what I grew up on, I just came to love it and realized that that really is my sound as an artist.
Yeah.
And here we are.
And how long did it take you to put this thing together, the album together?
You know, I started writing songs because I had another band that was doing like the shreddy bluesy Hendrixy type thing, and we gigged for a long time. We were called Shady Grady and the Nobodies, and we had a good little album and played a lot of gigs in town. And after a while, I just realized that it just wasn't really my voice anymore. It was just a lot of, you know, basically Steve Ray Vaughan covers, but with different lyrics over them. So at 19 years old, you take a step back and you're just like, oh, no one will notice.
Yeah.
And then eventually, oh, okay. Yeah. So when I started writing these, it was really kind of just a pet project, and I would play them at like my acoustic Potbellies gigs during the week.
Right.
You know,
right,
as we're wont to do.
Right.
And they got a really positive response from people, which I was not expecting, as I kind of assumed that people might think it was a little anachronistic, just like, you know, the old acoustic slide guitar thing. But, you know, I don't necessarily write my songs in a cliche, you know, oh, my woman left me. You know, it's a little bit broader than that.
Yeah.
So I was just able to do so much with a medium that I never really expected to. So I wrote these songs, a lot of them, you know, one of them I even wrote when I was 19 years old. And we just finished the record, finished recording it, I think about 2 years ago. So about a 2-year recording process, you know, in the middle of 160 gigs a year. So
right.
You find your time.
Right.
And then had a really great Kickstarter campaign and got all of our vinyl made. And now we have the band together and have been promoting like crazy. And we're getting ready to have a party at Martyrs.
And who's in the band with you?
So in the band are some musicians that are on the actual record and a couple guys I've met along the way. On drums is a fantastic drummer named Jonathan Reed, who anyone that has seen the Great Moments in Vinyl Hendrix show, he is the drummer for that. Also the drummer for the great Chicago jam band Old Shoe. The bass player is my good friend Kevin Campbell, mm-hmm. Who plays with a lot of different groups in town, most notably Terrapin Flyer. He's a great Grateful Dead cover band, and his own original project, Stampy, which is exceptional as well. They're on Spotify and iTunes for all of you guys with internet access. If things are going well. The mandolin player is named Pat Otto, which this guy is the man. I met him. I was playing at a small music festival downstate, and I was playing a lot of my original stuff, but just solo acoustic at the time. And I found I found a babbling brook. I was like, I'm gonna go play my guitar down by the babbling brook. I have 3 hour, why not?
Right.
And this guy comes out of nowhere with a mandolin. It was like, hey man, like, do you want to jam on something? Which immediately I'm like, oh, this guy, you know, the mandolin player at the hippie music festival,
found me
at the river. I was like, all right, let's play Man of Cons and Sorrow or something. And he plays two notes, and I go, oh, this guy is better than I am. And so from there, I got his contact info. And the second time we ever met was him recording parts for this record.
Wow.
Yeah. So it happened.
That moved
quickly.
Fast, man.
Very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Money exchanged hands almost immediately. It was perfect.
Wow.
So, and then the fiddle player, who's one of my all time favorite musicians, is a guy named Phil Roach, who played with Cornmeal, the band that I currently play with, for a long time. And he is absolutely exceptional. He is like the lead guitar player of the band, even though I'm on guitar. He plays the fiddles just smoking hot all night long, and we're really lucky to have him on the gig.
That's great, man. All right, you're going to hear all those guys at the big record release party on Thursday, November 8th at Martyrs. We have a link on our Facebook page for more information. Bill, hang on, okay? All right, we're going to take a break here and for the news, and when we come back, more with Bill Grady. The record is called Nothing Runs Free, and we'll hear two full songs from it in just a few minutes. We'll take a break and come back right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Tuesday. It's 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What you just heard there is Bill Grady, and he's hosting a record release party for his new album, Nothing Runs Free, and that will be on Thursday, November 8th at Martyrs. And Bill is back in studio. Welcome back, man.
Thank you so much.
All right. So you do 160 gigs or so a year.
I do.
Are a lot of those with bands or solo acoustic, just a mixture of things?
Yeah. You know, one thing that I really love to do in just my career in general is I love to play lots of different types of music. I just feel like every genre has so much good to offer and a lot of bad to offer too. So it's really kind of the challenge for me to find the joy in anything that I do. So I actually play a fair amount of weddings every year. Mm-hmm. Like we were just saying before we started recording, wedding season starting to die down, starting to relax a little bit. So, you know, a lot of that stuff is top 40, you know, which may or may not have guitar on it. But for something like that, it's kind of refreshing to go and play something totally different.
Right.
Rather than play, you know, the same, you know, play Mustang Sally five times a week.
Right.
So it's really cool. And I've met some musicians in that group that are absolutely incredible and inspiring that I never thought I would ever, you know, set foot on the same stage with.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a fair amount of those gigs, and then a lot of solo acoustic gigs throughout the week. Like I said, I play with a lot of Grateful Dead cover bands, which is a totally different, you know, songbook worth of stuff and a different style of playing.
Yeah.
That you go into. And so I'm lucky. I actually get to do, you know, probably around 30 of those every year. I'm actually playing, have you ever heard of the band Mr. Blotto?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Great. So I'm playing there. They're doing kind of their own festival in Indiana this weekend.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm playing a lot of, I'm playing a bunch of Grateful Dead songs kind of in the style that this record is in, kind of arranged for, you know, finger style blues, like slide guitar.
Yeah.
And I love getting to do stuff like that too. You know, kind of having my own style like this and then doing covers.
Yeah.
Know, kind of in that vein.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed playing so many different genres is kind of finding ways to put them together and mash them up and just get weird with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Well, tell me about the rest of the bill on the 8th.
All right. So yeah. The opening band is a band called Big Time Wookie, which actually is a band that I am also in.
Yeah.
I play a smaller role in it. And everyone in that band is also fantastic. It's just the most fun. So we do a mix of some Grateful Dead covers and a couple surprises here and there. Mm. You know, yeah, gotta come to the show to find out.
Who named the band?
me and the bass player named the band. And you know, kind of an inside joke, but the whole thing with me was like, I don't want to take this too seriously. You know, we'll gig, you know, 5-6 times a year, and our goal is to have more fun than the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and if we fail, it means we did a good job.
Okay.
So the harmonies in this group are my favorite thing. It's just the four singers in the band, like, we just blend so well, which is so not a given.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm involved, because I've been known to cloud up some amazing graces in my day. So we're hitting at 8 o'clock, and then the other band on the bill is Leadfoot, who's an exceptional bluegrass band from right here in Chicago, and I've actually been fortunate to gig with a lot of the members of that band. So the fact that they are direct support for this is a dream come true. Mm. I would never have thought that in my wildest dreams.
And Martyrs is a great room.
The best.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And what are some of your favorite places that you play in the city, in and around the city?
You know, the show at City Winery was awesome. That room is just so pro. It sounds great. And getting to do the Hendrix stuff there, too, was cool, because we were able to be rowdy but still be in such, you know, a perfect room.
Yeah.
You know. So
yeah, I've been there. It's a great place.
It's
fantastic. It's a great place.
So City Winery is great. I love Reggie's down on the south side on State Street.
I do too.
That Mr. Blotto plays there on Tuesdays, and as soon as I turned 21, that was a spot that I would go to as much as I could.
Right.
I think it's like 35-cent chicken wings. Just like knock you out. So I love Reggie's. I played with a hip hop artist named Sir the Baptist for a while. And we did a benefit concert at Northerly Island.
Wow.
And like, I could not have had less to do with making that happen.
Yeah.
I just came along for the ride and went, wow, this is pretty cool.
I've only been to Northern Ireland twice. It was both for Dave Matthews shows.
Oh, right on.
And but that's a big venue.
It's a big venue. It was by no means at capacity.
Yeah.
I think it was the I believe it was just kind of the pit area, but it was still cool to look out and be like,
No, that's cool, man. That's very, very
weather
cool.
Weather held up, you know? Yeah. Great photo op.
Very cool, man. All right, well, listen, let's hear the first song on your CD here that you brought in.
Sweet.
We'll listen to it in its entirety. Tell us about what we're going to hear. What song?
So this is the lead single for the record. We just released it a week or two ago on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. And it was actually the last song that I finished for the record, which is on my first album was the same thing, where the last song that I finished was the best song on the record. Kind of makes you want to go back and rewrite some stuff. But this is called Where I Belong. And the record itself, from front to back, tells a story all the way through, kind of like Tommy, you know, or Quadrophenia or something like that. So this is kind of the summing it up kind of conclusion song of the record. It's the last song on the record. Which, by the way, it's going to be out on Spotify and iTunes on the 8th as well.
On the 8th, same day as your record release.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah, we worked that out.
Okay, cool. All right.
So, yeah, this is it came together really well, and this features Kevin Campbell, who's going to be at the release show, and my good buddy Packy Lundholm as well on percussion and vocals.
Okay.
Yeah, let it rip.
All right, here we go.
Mountains and kiss the sky, sail through rivers deep and wide. So don't pray for me, my darling, 'cause I'm going to the place where I belong. I'd steal the stars, sun and moon, the shade and be with you. So don't pray for me, my darling, 'cause I'm going to the place where I belong.
Where I belong.
I haven't been there for too
darling, 'cause I'm going. Good stuff, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. It's Bill Grady. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. And then we've got another song to play from your CD, which is going to have the big record release party is on Thursday, November 8th at Martyrs. Nothing runs free. We have a link on our Facebook page, and you can find it there. And then BillGradyMusic.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. That music that you just heard is from Bill Grady, who's joined us live in studio. Bill, welcome back, man.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. He's hosting a record release party for his new album, Nothing Runs Free, and it's Thursday, November 8th at Martyrs. Great stuff. And we were talking off the air. It's Halloween time, so we can talk about this for a couple of seconds.
Great.
Bill has recently gotten into the horror movies, and you know, Hereditary screwed you up
big time. Struggling very hard.
Yeah, you freaked out. I'm wearing a Hereditary T-shirt with the symbol of the god that they worship in the movie. That is something else right there, man. I mean, that's. Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of horror movies. You know, in the past few years, there've been a lot of good ones, scary ones. We mentioned A Quiet Place off the air, mm-hmm. which is really a really terrific movie. But Hereditary's on a whole nother level.
Yeah, I think I saw the movie back in I think May. I think about it twice a week.
Yeah,
no matter what.
Yeah, no. It is that kind of movie. And Toni Collette is amazing in it. And so I know that we'll be talking about that for the next couple of shows because it's, you know, Halloween.
I was about to say, get it in while you can.
Yeah. So it's a good one. If you get a chance, there's two other ones that I would quickly recommend.
Oh yeah,
The Babadook.
I've heard of The Babadook. That's on the list.
Oh yeah, yeah, and It Follows.
Okay.
Those are two that you should definitely show. Oh, and Don't Breathe. That's another good one.
I don't know if I've heard of Don't Breathe.
Yeah, Don't Breathe came out a couple summers ago.
Sweet. I actually just saw Jacob's Ladder over the weekend.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Classic.
Dude, that ending came out of nowhere.
Yeah. No. Classic. Yeah, I know. A total surprise ending at the end. Yeah, they're remaking that again. They're remaking everything. I don't understand. I just saw the Suspiria remake. Of classic 1977 Italian horror movie Suspiria, and I actually liked it.
Wild.
So, and I was predisposed to hate it because Suspiria is one of my favorite movies of all time, the original, and you can't remake it.
Definitely.
But then I ended up liking it.
That's how they get you sometimes.
I know, man. I know.
Like, you have to see it for yourself, and you see it, it's like, oh no, I'm in this now.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah. All right, well, let's hear another song. This is from Nothing Runs Free. And tell me about what we're going to hear here.
So this song is called Hop on the Bus. And this is one of the, I think this is the second song that I wrote lyrics for on the record. The record is 12 songs, 8 vocal tunes, 4 instrumental tunes.
Oh, okay.
Because when I was in here last year, we were talking about the Allman Brothers doing that Fillmore East.
Oh, yeah.
And they really taught me that writing instrumentals can be very important. And you can really... have those things, those tunes be a part of your story and say something without really having.
And there was any a time, there was a time when instrumentals actually charted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they were hits. And it doesn't happen very often now, but there was a time when it was perfectly acceptable to release an instrumental as a single.
Yeah. And I was really tempted to release one of my instrumentals as a single, but enough people talked me down. I was like, easy.
Yeah.
It'll be on Spotify. So this one, writing lyrics has always been a little bit of a, just a little bit of a challenge. Like music definitely comes a little bit more naturally, but I loved getting to write for this record, you know, kind of getting to write as characters.
Yeah.
So this is a part of the story where our protagonist runs into this bus full of people and they are this song is from their perspective, and it's just kind of about confronting your past and dealing with the things that you need to deal with.
All right.
And it features a violin player named Jeremy Garrett about halfway through from a band called the Infamous String Dusters, who are absolutely incredible and actually just won a Grammy for, I think, Best Bluegrass Album.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. So, which only means that this is going to do the same thing. So spread the word. You heard it here first.
Spread the word, man. All right, you ready?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go.
Say hard rain's gonna fall, so you better follow me. They say hard rain's gonna fall, so you better follow me. Just hop on the bus like the rest of us, and I'll tell you how it's gonna be. You say your heart is cold and yearning, but your soul is spread too thin. You say your heart is cold and yearning, but your soul is spread too thin. Just hop on the bus like the rest of us, and please tell us where you've been. And the wind begins to whisper, and the laughs run way down low. Your heart is cold and yearning with the fire down below. Your head is pounding loud, and it only goes to show that we've been waiting for you to show you all we know. Tell me where you gonna run to when that storm comes rolling in. Tell me where you gonna run to when that storm comes rolling in. Just hop on the bus like the rest of us, and we'll tell you where we've been. Like the rest of us, and we'll tell you where we've been.
All right, man. Great stuff, man. I love the way you play.
Thank you.
My guest is Bill Grady, musician Bill Grady, and he's hosting a record release party for his new album, if those songs were from, Nothing Runs Free, and that's on Thursday, November 8th. It's happening at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln Avenue. You check out BillGradyMusic.com, and we have a link on our Facebook page for more information. All right, before we let you out of here, and I asked you this question, I believe the last time you were here, I always ask two questions of musicians when they come in. First album you ever bought?
First album I ever bought was Are You Experienced by Jimi Hendrix.
Wow, okay. And first concert?
First concert was Dave Matthews Band at Alpine Valley.
All right, there you go, man.
Which is actually funny because he was definitely growing up in that era. He was a guy that played the acoustic guitar very differently than a lot of people did.
Yeah.
And so, like, learning a lot of his stuff, you kind of realized how you can make an acoustic guitar sound like a couple instruments. So this music is, you know, directly and indirectly very influenced by him.
Yeah, I'm a huge Dave fan. Yeah, I've seen Dave multiple times. So, well, listen, man, always a pleasure to have you in, man. Your music's awesome, and it's called Nothing Runs Free. And the record release party is Thursday, November 8th, and it's at Martyrs. And you can get your information. By the way, it's 21 and over show, 12 in advance, 15 at the door. So there you go. And it says showtime's at 8. And along with, I want to mention again, Leadfoot and Big Time Wookie. Okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, Bill. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And it is 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's Scott from Streamwood. Picking the Allman Brothers with One Way Out. All right. Yeah, man. Tomorrow is Halloween. Boy, it's come by fast, man. And,
Wrong switch, Igor.
Yes. My two buddies here keeping me company.
Sink your teeth into that.
And luckily they're wearing their shreddies. So, well, so tomorrow is Halloween, and we are going to do our 21st annual Halloween Spooktacular. We're going to talk scary movies, scary TV shows, scary books, horror stuff, play some clips, Halloween music. My special guest will be the great Dana DiLorenzo, star of Ash vs. Evil Dead and my future ex-wife. But we will kick off the show tomorrow to remind you guys that on Thursday, Movember begins, and that is November with an M. That means Movember, and it is the month that, if you would like to, shave yourself clean and then grow a mustache and maintain that mustache throughout the entire month of November, and raise money towards men's health issues, both physical and mental. Movember is a great organization, and I've taken part in Movember by growing a mustache every year, and I'll do it again. And you can follow my progress of my mustache and hopefully donate some money so that I can reach my goal to raise money for men's charities. So that's going to be happening, and I'm going to be clean shaven on Thursday. So it's going to be weird. My face will be cold. I'll have a cold face. Then the mustache will grow in, and I always do the Fu Manchu mustache. That's the one that I always, the style that I go for every time I do the Movember. So that'll be coming up on Thursday morning. And one of the guys from Movember is going to join us tomorrow before we actually officially kick off the Halloween show and tell you all about how you can be a part of Movember, both supporting and participating. So that's coming up tomorrow. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Okay, the McRib is back, as we all know. And I have some facts about the McRib sandwich. Dan, are you a fan of the McRib?
I am, yes.
Yes, it's a delicious sandwich.
Quite tasty, and yeah. We've talked about this in the past. I think it also plays into our Neanderthal leanings because it's, you know, you get your mouth all dirty from eating it.
Yeah.
It's a piece of meat.
Looks like bones.
Right.
Even though it's not.
Right. The sauce and, you know. It's like you hunted your own animal down, and
yeah. And I also enjoy the bun. I enjoy. There's no other sandwich at the McDonald's facilities that have that bun.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. So, so we have some facts about the McDonald's McRib, and then we've got some recipes that no one makes anymore. That I'm sure some old school. Maybe we can talk about some old school food that you guys eat. So here are some facts about the McRib. The sandwich contains 70 ingredients. There's more to a McRib than barbecue sauce slathered pork on a bun with onions and pickles. The sandwich contains a staggering 70 different ingredients, the least innocuous of which are pig bits like tripe, heart, and scalded stomach. Let's see. And some azicocarbonate and ammonium sulfate. Ammonium sulfate? Exhalated mono and diglycerides and more things like that you get the idea of. But that sounds really tasty. Tripe, heart, and scalded stomach. Tripe, heart, and scalded stomach. Those were, there was a comedy act in the 60s. Yeah! Kangaroo meat is not one of the ingredients. A persistent urban legend lingering around the internet says the rib-shaped patty is actually made from Australia's famous kangaroos. It's not. How did that start? Where would that come from? I mean,
I don't want to ruin it, but there's a theory laid in the article. But still, that's just ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. But then again, you know, people said that Bubble Yum was made out of spider eggs. You know, I don't know where that came from. Hey, man, you can't eat Bubble Yum. It's made from spider eggs. And that Mikey from the Life cereal commercials head exploded because he put some Pop Rocks in his mouth and drank some Coke, and then his head actually exploded off of his body. That's true. That one we can confirm. His head did completely explode.
You sent your investigative team on that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't really, because it sounds very realistic. I don't know if you even need an investigative team. I believe that. The kid's head exploded because he ate Pop Rocks and drank Coke. Like, right out of scanners. It's been around for more than 35 years, the McRib. Yes, it has. The McRib debuted on the McDonald's menus in 1981. That's when I first got hired by McDonald's, was in 1981. And I think it was on the menu, or it just debuted on the menu. But it was far from an immediate hit. It was pulled from the menus in 1985 because of poor sales. In 1994, the fast food behemoth tried again and found greater success with the McRib. In 2005, the sandwich became a bit more elusive, popping up for limited time spans only. To find the McRib nearest you, there is a McRib locator. Yeah. So it was on the menu the whole time I worked at McDonald's. Regularly. I always liked the McRib. Man, we used to, you know what we used to do, Dan? Don't tell my boss. Who at the time?
The one you dated
also,
or one of the other
my
ones?
My girlfriend.
Yeah. I don't think she would have minded. Just the hunch.
We would take the patties and we'd cook them up, and there were three marinating containers that were filled with sauce. One was you just kind of kept it heated with nothing in it. And then one was full of you would cook the patties as long as they would take, and then you would stick them in the marinator so they would marinate in the sauce. And it was heated, obviously. So, but we would use the third one, because one would just be sauce if we needed extra sauce, or if there was a rush and we needed to cook more patties and throw them in the second one to marinate. The third one was our personal one, where we would cook a bunch of patties and then rip them up into pieces, throw them in the marinade, and then every once in a while walk by and just grab them.
There you go.
Yeah. You see that, you know, the
I assume hands in, not with a...
No, we would use tong.
You would use tong.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Sanitary.
Yeah. We would use tong. Well, I mean, we were the only ones, you know. But yeah, you're not supposed to do that, by the way. Here's another great thing. You know, I don't know if this is the case now with the McNuggets, but there was a big container right near the front where you would wrap the sandwiches and put the sandwiches in there. And back then, in the very eco-friendly styrofoam containers. There were, I want to say, three or four drawers that were in like this heated, like it was like a, you know, like a heated oven thing. And when you would finish, when the nuggets would come out of the fryer, you would dump them into those drawers. And that's another thing. We would just open the drawer, grab a nugget, boom, pop it in your mouth, move on. And I know that everybody did this. Whoever worked at McDonald's did this too. Near closing time, if you, you know, if you guys were going to go out, say, let's like in my day and age, go, I don't know, hang out in the parking lot or whatever, maybe go to the forest preserve. We go to Labah? I think we would go to Labah. We go to Labah Woods. Like, you know, we close at like 11, get out there at like midnight. And we would have sacks of food. So because like towards the end of the night, we'd go, hey, let's load up on some of the food. So that at the end of the night, you had fresher and hot food that, of course, would, you know, the waste numbers would go sky high. But we'd have something to eat at the forest preserve or in the McDonald's parking lot. Because that's what you did. Now, where's the McRib locator? That's online, right? You just is. I mean, because right now there are.
Yeah, it's spelled VINCEMARANTO.
That's good.
McRiblocator.com.
Well, I mean, it's now you don't need it, right? Because it's around. Because it's available. Do you need the McRib locator? Don't you just go to McDonald's?
Well, I think this is for your friends, you know, that are for the enthusiasts.
Oh, the McRib enthusiasts, like Vince.
Keith Carlson, who spotted one at 1:59 in Oswego.
1:59 a.m.?
Yep.
What the hell was that?
Wow.
Something weird just happened, man. I don't know what's going on.
Just a ghost looking for some McRibs.
Wow.
It did sound something like dropped below us.
Well, we're going to, you know what? I'm going to take a break and I'm going to walk over there and see what happened.
All right.
It is, you know, the day before Halloween.
It is.
That was weird, man. That was really weird. Maybe we should get Bob in here. He can check out what's happening. That was very weird. Anyway, that was a first. All right, let's take a break here, and we'll find out what's going on in the Haunted Skyline Studio.
All right, man.
It is Tuesday.
Yeah, man, two for Tuesday.
And Scott from Streamwood with the Allman Brothers and Stormy Monday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for your requests for Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. All right, so we figure out what the noise was. So sitting here talking, all of a sudden, kaboom, I hear a noise like right underneath the console, a little, I don't know, maybe 4 feet away from where I'm sitting. A noise I've never heard before. So I didn't know what the hell was happening. So it was weird. But what it was there are, there's a panel on the side of the shelving unit on the bottom underneath the console that holds like the wires for the computer and some of the other technical wires, and it popped off. It was being held on by Velcro, and it popped off and banged into the chair and onto the floor. So that's what it was. There was a logical explanation for it. So that's the first time I've ever heard anything like that in the studio without someone else being in the studio with me. So it was a little weird. I've been doing this a long time, and something like that has never happened. But we have an explanation for it. It makes sense, and everything is fine and dandy. So, no Damien's in here. Well, welcome back. Now, what we were talking about was the McRib locator. Now, so there was a dude who said, what was it, at like 1:59 this morning?
Yep. So, 20 minutes.
He spotted one in
Oswego.
Oswego. What does that mean, spotted one on the side of the road?
I think it doesn't just like, yes. Some guy made us a game of just dropping them off on the side of the road to see how long you get before the authorities pick it up.
Next to a pile of diapers.
No, I think it's just like a, hey, I saw it at this location. It's available at this location now if you guys are interested type of thing.
Right.
I think this is more for the folks before its national rollout where they're still kind of just in a few
oh, okay.
things here and there.
Okay. I don't know. You know, I'm assuming it's available at the one by my place. Right? It should be. I mean, that's a pretty busy McDonald's.
Yeah, I think at this point, now that there's commercials and everything, I think it's pretty much available at all, unless your franchise is not participating.
Yes, and remember, that's always in the fine print. So the McRib locator is a fine tool. All right, more McRib facts. It contains 70 ingredients. Kangaroo meat is not one of the ingredients, despite the urban legend. It's been around for more than 35 years. And it was inspired by a trip to Charleston, South Carolina. Renee Arend, who served as McDonald's executive chef from 76 to 2004, was inspired to create the McRib after consuming several pulled pork sandwiches during a trip to Charleston. He thought the flavor combination should, quote-unquote, really go over. I agree. Why didn't they just do pulled pork then? You know, instead of like mashing the meat into a.
Would that be, as someone who's worked that side of it, would that be too messy?
And I don't think it would also. Here's another thing is, you know, in a situation where the turnover is so great at McDonald's, you would probably have to have a pretty exact amount of pulled pork that you're going to put on there. As opposed to, like, you know, just, you know, just putting as much in there as possible. And, you know, you get 16-year-olds working there. You're going to put 15 pounds of pulled pork on the sandwich before they give it to their friends.
Right before closing time.
Right,
before
they go
to La Bella Wood.
You can thank the chicken farmers for the McRib's invention. Turns out McNuggets, which debuted in 1979, were so popular that McDonald's couldn't keep up with the demand. As Aaron said in 2009... quote, there wasn't a system to supply enough chicken. We had to come up with something to give the other franchises a new product. So the McRib came about because of the shortage of chickens. Wow, man. All right. You know, I will say this. The McChicken or McNuggets were not available at my store when I first started working there. They say here they debuted in 79, but they didn't hit my store at Irving and Major until like 81 or 82. I think the McRib came before, because I remember that one of the years that I was working at McDonald's and I was still, you know, in high school, that summer McDonald's actually had a tent at Taste of Chicago, and the tent only sold McNuggets, and it was brand new. And my girlfriend at the time, who was also a manager there, we had to work that tent, and it was nuts. And I think the ticket, you know, the tickets that you have to give from Taste of Chicago, I think it got you four nuggets, or maybe three, but I just remember it was new then. It was brand new then, and that was after 1979, so I guess it must have rolled out a little bit slower. Didn't get to Irving and Major until. You know, till later. That McDonald's is still there now, Irving and Major, but it's all redone. It's all fancy schmancy now. When I worked there, it was a piece of crap. Yeah, it's there, right? Still next to the Dairy Queen. I'll tell you what I missed, though, was the bowling alley. You know the bowling alley right across the street there?
Mm-hmm.
It's a dollar store now.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. What are we talking about here? I bowled my high game at that. No, I didn't. I bowled my high game at Belmont Bowl. But I bowled some high games there. We used to go there all the time. 312 area code says, McDonald's sandwiches are terrible. They may have had a decent chicken breast sandwich at one time, but Wendy's is way better. Everybody seems to like Wendy's more than... everybody seems to enjoy the Wendy's.
Yeah, I mean, like, I disagree. I think McDonald's has some fine products, but definitely Wendy's is
my better. My dad is a Wendy's guy. Without question, he's a Wendy's guy. Russ says, Nick, in my entire 46 years on this earth, I have never had a McRib. But all this talk about it, and I will now have to finally try one for the first time in my life. Listen, they're fantastic, but don't yell at me if you don't like it. And just keep in mind, it does look like it has bones, but those aren't bones. That is super processed meat. So... Yeah, Russ, man, I don't know. Got to tell you. I love the McRib. All right, next, a little fact about the McRib. You can thank the Flintstones for its return. After mediocre sales, the McRib was pulled from the national menu in 1985. Oh, I'm continuing to talk even though it's time for news. I'm sorry, Vic. When I start talking about the McRib, I just get carried away. All right, news in 30 seconds. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday.
Yeah, man, two for Tuesday.
Yeah, that's one artist, two songs. And Elizabeth requesting some Frankie Lane. That's I Believe. Elizabeth listens every night and loves the show. Thank you, Elizabeth. That's very kind of you. It is Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we've been talking about the McRib. I've got some fantastic facts about the McRib. Hey, by the way, it was Irving Park Lanes is the bowling alley, Dan, that we were talking about. And it was I remember that was one of the first bowling alleys. Because I spent a significant amount of time in the 80s bowling in that at that place. That was one of the first ones to get the automatic scoring. And it was a big deal. I remember it was a big deal. It was like, oh, man, look. You know, the graphics were like nothing at that time. But it was, you know, you got the automatic scoring. And I don't think, when they first got the automatic scoring, I think not all the lanes had it. So, like, it was like a bonus treat if you ended up on a lane that had the automatic scoring. Now there's automatic scoring in every bowling alley ever, you know. And do people know how to keep score anymore? Do people even know how to keep score?
I would think that it's, you know, like the enthusiasts, like the guys who go out of their way to go to Timber Lanes, you know.
Oh, Timber Lanes rules.
Yeah.
Speaking of Irving Park.
Yeah, but I don't know if they have automatic at Timber Lanes.
I haven't been to Timber Lanes in years.
Yeah.
I love keeping score.
Yeah.
I mean, you can opt to have a paper, right? You can still go to the bowling alley and not do the automatic. It'll do, but you can also keep score.
Right, right.
Yeah, you can get a pencil and a paper and the score. Yeah. Yeah. What are other things that people don't know how to do anymore? Like, nobody knows how to keep score on bowling anymore. All this stuff that's now automated. Vic, do you know how to keep score on bowling?
Yeah, I think so. It's been a long time since I bowled. What about this? Nobody remembers phone numbers anymore.
That's true.
We used to have to know those things.
You know, my phone went...
I don't know Jeannie's phone number.
Here's the thing. My phone went nuts over the summer at one point. I woke up and it wouldn't turn on. Like, it was dead.
Yeah.
Nothing. And I went over to my parents' house because I had no way of contacting. I don't have a landline.
Yeah, me neither.
And so... I went over. Oh, I didn't even think about this. You know what, Dan? I'm an idiot. That morning, I have a tablet.
Oh yeah.
I could have contacted them via my tablet. I didn't even think of that because the phone is just there. It was next to the bed. So I went over to my parents' house, and I don't know their number by heart. I now carry Dan's number, my parents' number, and other phone numbers with me. You know, in case something goes wrong and my phone goes nuts. But yeah, no, I don't know any phone numbers. I don't. But yeah. Let's see. This is Bakery Guy. All right. Bakery Guy.
Morning.
Morning.
The guy that owned Irving Lane's, Jack Meitzel, owned Karlov also at Pulaski and Armitage.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first in the city to get the automatic scoring.
Yeah, and I think Irving Park was right on that, right on the cusp of that, right? Because I remember
not for a while.
I remember it being one of the first places that my friends and I went to where they got the automatic scoring.
That was later.
This
is early 70s. This was in the 70s.
Oh no, well, this was in the 80s. It was in the 80s at Irving Park.
Yeah, 70s when they had the automatic scoring at Carlisle. He's one of the first in the area.
Wow, that is early.
He was big in the Proprietors Association.
That is really early, man. In the 70s. Wow.
Because he had a tournament there, and we had to use it for the tournament, and everybody kept screwing up, so they had to put people on the thing to move the marker to the right person.
Right. Now, you know, I knew some of the guys, some of the other guys that used to hang out at Irving Park Lanes. See if you know these guys. You worked there, right, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know the Gertner brothers?
No. Did you know the guy that worked the counter, John DeBacher?
Yeah. I knew. This was, I guess, maybe this was a different time period.
No, they still owned it.
They still okay. Well, yeah, I probably did know him.
He had a beard.
But the Gertner brothers, they were twins, and they were exceptional bowlers. And they one of them got a job there. They bowled there all the time. And
that was afterward. Jack still owned it.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Anyway, and one of the Gertner brothers rolled a 300 at Irving Park Lanes.
Did you ever look in the wall over by 1 and 2 to plaques with
yes.
the 300s?
Mm-hmm.
Remember all the names?
No.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah, I barely remember what I did yesterday. So, but well, right,
I had the first one up there.
Oh, is it good for you, man? How many 300s have you rolled?
About 12.
Good for you, man. That's amazing. All right, good for you. All right, bakery guy, have a good morning, buddy.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
See ya. Wow, a hell of a bowler. Yeah, about 12. And he's just like so matter of fact about it. Oh, how many 300s have you rolled? About 12. God, I've never rolled a 300. And my high game though is pretty impressive though. That was at Belmont Bowl. I blew one frame, 289. My high
Ooh.
Game, 289. It was brutal. Brutal. Wow, 12? Have you ever rolled a 300, Dan?
Oh, no. Maybe 12 games combined.
Are you not a good bowler?
I'm a little bit better than I was, but yeah, it wasn't pretty at the beginning.
Yeah, I started bowling at a really young age. They used to call me Earl Anthony because I'm a lefty when I bowl. Do you know Earl Anthony?
I do not.
He was a famous left-handed bowler in the 70s and 80s. That's when they used to call me. Because nobody bowled. None of my friends bowled with their left hand. I was the only one. And so they would call me Earl Anthony. That's dating me, man. People right now who know who Earl Anthony is, like, yeah, I'm in my 50s. I know who he is. He's a great bowler, though. Earl Anthony, he was great. So but before we get back to... Are we going back to bowling? No, we're not. Okay. We can thank the Flintstones for its return. We're talking about the McRib, not bowling. Although the Flintstones were on a bowl, they were on a bowling league.
There you go.
What was their team name? It had to have something to do with a rock, right? Because they threw a rock instead of a bowling ball. They did throw a rock, but they must have had a bowling team name that had something to do with being prehistoric. Because everything with the Flintstones was some sort of like prehistoric or rock pun.
Yeah, Flintstone Flyers keep coming up, but that doesn't sound right.
Flintstone Flyers? No, that can't be right. I don't know. Now the Honeymooners, the bowling team. I don't know. Did they have a name? I know they bowled for the Raccoon Lodge because they were in the Raccoon Lodge. Hurricanes. They were the Hurricanes. On the Honeymooners, which is the live-action version of the Flintstones. Or the Flintstones is the cartoon version of the Honeymooners, I should say. Anyway, you can thank the Flintstones for its return. After mediocre sales, the McRib was pulled from the national menu in 1985. When the live-action Flintstones movie hit theaters in 1994, McDonald's capitalized on the resemblance between the slab of ribs atop the Flintstone mobile and the pork patty, and brought it back as a movie tie-in. They brought it back as a tie-in to the terrible Flintstones movie? Wow. Well, there were two terrible. Did you know there was a second Flintstones movie, Dan?
Yeah, and they had to, not featuring the original cast, correct?
It was, let's see, because in the original, it was John Goodman was Fred, Barney was Rick Moranis, Wilma was
Elizabeth Perkins,
and then Rosie O'Donnell, right? The other, what, why am I blanking Betty. On the other wife? Who?
Wasn't it Betty?
Betty. So, and then in the sequel, I can't remember who played Fred, but Stephen Baldwin played Barney. And I can't remember who. I just remember Stephen Baldwin was Barney. That's the only thing I remember about the sequel. And they did it. They did this bit on Saturday Night Live, one of the 9,000 times that John Goodman hosted, And he's out doing the monologue, and I can't remember what cast members they were. They're standing backstage and they're watching the monitor and they're going, "Man, he's really wasted." And they were talking about how John Goodman was wasted, and like kind of bombing up there and like struggling and really, you know, completely out of it. And so they end up pulling him backstage. They get John Goodman backstage by the monitor and they're talking to him, and he's like, he's like, what's wrong with you, John? I mean, you're really out of sorts. You know, this is, you know, you've hosted this show so many times. You're such a professional. Why are you in this kind of shape? And he's like, I don't know, because I'm in that stupid new Flintstones movie. And he goes, they go, no, you're not in the movie. He's like, I'm not. Oh, good. So the Flintstones are responsible for bringing the McRib back in 1994. I do not remember that at all.
Trucker Rich says that they belong to the Water Buffalo Lodge.
And
so they bowled under the name the Water Buffaloes.
Oh, okay. So it's just like, because I think they were the Hurricanes, but they bowled for the Raccoon Lodge in the Honeymooners. All right. 815 area code says, I used to go out with a girl who was about 5'5", 110 pounds. She once ate 6 McRibs in one sitting. The girl could eat. Wow. That's pretty impressive. Vince Moranto right now, very, very, very impressed. 5'5", 110 pounds and down 6 McRibs. I can't do that. Zach says, Culver's beats out McDonald's and Wendy's any day. Yeah, Culver's is great. Culver's is great. 815 area code says, thanks for helping solidify my conversion to veganism. Don't give me credit for that. Please don't give me credit for anybody converging to veganism. That's the last thing people should be converging to. No, I will not take credit for somebody becoming a vegan. No. All right, let's take another quick break here. We got more McRib facts and Flintstone and bowling facts. I don't know. I don't know what's going on anymore. All right. Hey, take a break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. 2 for Tuesday. Elizabeth requesting Frankie Lane. And That's My Desire. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. 312-981-7200. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Coming up at 5 o'clock is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich and Steve Cochran. We'll be coming up at 6. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. We've been talking about some facts about the McRib, which led us to talking about bowling and the Flintstones, because the Flintstones were responsible for their return to the menu in 1994 after being taken off the menu for about 9 years. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland, Nick.
Hey.
Just wanted to let you know that the Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas featured Mark Addy as Fred Flintstone.
All right. That's what it, Mark Addy, that's right.
Now that you remember that, your life is complete.
Yeah, wow. I totally forgotten about that. And it was Viva Rock Vegas was the name of the movie.
Yeah. I bet Mark Addy wishes you'd forget about it, too.
Yeah, I bet he does. Yeah. All right, Mark, thanks.
Have a good
Take
one.
Take care. Mark Addy, actually very funny British dude. I don't know. I totally forgot it was called Viva Rock Vegas. Oh, my God. All right. How about this? Its shape is very intentional. No, really? That's not just a mistake. It just accidentally turned out to look like that. The McRib is sort of famous for not containing ribs. So why does it look like a slab of ribs? Just because, apparently. Some thought, why not just make it round, recalls Aaron. Would have been easier, but I wanted it to look like a slab of ribs. So there you have it. Good for you, man. And now it's like
putting his foot down.
Exactly. And now it's like one of the most iconic looking sandwiches in the history of sandwiches and iconics. In 2011, McDonald's hosted the Quest for the Golden McRib. I don't remember this at all. It seems there were golden McRibs virtually hidden in McDonald's across the country. Previous events include the Legend of the McRib contest, which asked fans to create a mythical history for the sandwich. Wow. Hey, Dan, do you remember the episode of The Simpsons where Homer follows around the pork sandwich from Krusty?
Yes.
And it was obviously based on this insanity where people go around the country following the McRib. And it was like a Woodstock thing, but it was like pork stock or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was from Krusty Burger. And Homer followed around the sandwich, much like people do with the McRib.
People hypothesize that's where the kangaroo thing came from, where people, you know, were asked to make up their own McRib legend. And so,
when they had the mythical history,
right?
Oh, so. So somebody's mythical history involved kangaroo meat?
Possibly.
Okay, possibly. You got to find those golden McRibs. They're virtually hidden in McDonald's all across the country. Great. Next, little fact here about the McRib. A fake petition to save the McRib was featured on the McDonald's website in 2005. It was sponsored by the Boneless Pig Farmers of America. Come on, man. Orion was wise to that. No boneless pig farmers of America. Although the pig farmers of America are very appreciative of the McRib and its sales. It was a fake petition to save the McRib. All right. And then the final fact about the McRib that I'm sharing with you that I know that you'll find fascinating. The process of turning meat into a McRib patty takes about 45 minutes. The pork meat is chopped up, then seasoned, then formed into that shape that looks like a rib back, Rob Cannell, former director of McDonald's U.S. supply chain, said in 2009. And then we flash freeze it, and the whole process takes 45 minutes. That sounds fabulous. Well, it's back, everybody. The McRib, as Jack Osborne is probably. But Jack Osborne's probably very excited right now. So, yeah. It's not kangaroo meat, kangaroo meat though. Any new updates on the McRib locator, Dan?
Well, you know, it's funny. One of our texters had pointed out that he had texted us when we spoke about this last week. And so he's like, are you guys the McRib locator too? The most recent one at 218 was in Grove City, Ohio. It was spotted by Stanley.
Stanley spotted it at 219?
218.
218.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're lagging behind McRibs.
Yeah, Well, it is almost 3 o'clock in the morning. So I think it might be harder to spot McRibs at 3 in the morning than at maybe 3 in the afternoon. But they've got to be around. People are still craving the McRibs. And, you know, a lot of McDonald's are 24 hours. You can get the McRib 24 hours when it's on the menu, right?
I don't see why not.
Yeah.
A15 is going to go order 6 McRibs now.
Wow.
Because of this conversation.
Is she 5'5", 110 pounds?
I have a habit of not asking women those questions.
No wonder I've been divorced twice. Yeah.
So at the McRib locator, your options, your tabs, is the homepage where you can, you know, they list the latest McRib sightings, and then you can also make it into a map.
Oh.
Yes. Unfortunately, it seems that Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, and Idaho are very lacking.
In McRibs?
Yes, and at least in McRib sightings, because the majority is definitely on the East Coast.
Oh, it's the East Coast.
Us, yes.
Oh, okay.
Then we have the Find a McRib, which they allow you allow your location.
Like, put your zip code in or something, and then it says, hey, you're 5 minutes away from a McRib.
Yeah, so 303 East Wacker.
Oh, you can put the whole address in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So what's the closest
one
to here?
Oh, you can go multiple countries.
Multiple. Oh, okay.
Yeah. At 180 East Adams. It's 0.869 miles from us. And it is confirmed that they are selling McRibs.
They are selling McRibs right down Adams.
Yep, 5 miles away on Milwaukee at 2707 North Milwaukee. It is confirmed, as is the location on Lincoln and Kedzie.
Well, what about Irving and Elston?
Let's see here.
Because that's the one that's near my my homestead. See if they're they're selling the McRib. And by the way, they should be, because every time you pass that McDonald's, there are 900 cars in the drive. There are 900 cars in the drive-thru. Every single time. Doesn't matter what time. It's 24-hour McDonald's right there at Irving and Elston. And there's always 900 cars in the drive-thru.
It is not listed, but that just means somebody has not reported that it's available there.
All right. Well, it should be available.
And then so people who are going to right now go to confirm that, you can also report where their McRibs on the website. There's a blog, apparently, about all your McRib sightings.
Wow.
And then contact us.
All right. All right. Well, we are going to break for the news, and then I've got some other fast food news and 25 recipes that no one makes anymore, but they should. And then let's go into like old school recipes and old school food that you used to eat maybe growing up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you cite a McRib, tell us. All right. News is up next. Dan, you know who's really happy about this request?
Who's that?
The guys from What's Happening.
Oh, yes.
It's two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. And that's Emo picking the Doobies. Doobie Brothers with Another Park, Another Sunday. And the reason I bring it up, maybe people don't remember, there was that ridiculous episode of What's Happening where the guys got busted for bootlegging. It was Rerun, I believe. Rerun was in the front of the stage, and he had a tape recorder, and he was tape recording the Doobie Brothers concert. And then they had to learn a lesson about how that was wrong. Even though the last band on the planet that you would expect the guys from What's Happening to want to bootleg is the Doobie Brothers. It's so weird. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday, one artist, two songs. Yeah! 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on the 18th floor here above street here on the road. Columbus and Wacker, I believe, is where we are. Right, Dan? That's where we are. I don't know what the hell's going on anymore.
Yes, we are Columbus and Wacker.
Because I went to go see Suspiria last night at a 7 o'clock in the evening screening, and the movie ended at 9:34 because it's 2 hours and 34 minutes long. And I did not go home nor nap. Came straight here, and I'm getting a little looped right now. I've not had a lot of sleep, Dan.
We're starting to sense that.
I don't know what the hell's going on, but I think I need a McRib.
I mean, Uber Eats will do it for you.
Yeah, let's do that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. So, you know, we were just talking about the McRib, and it is McRib time, and we love to talk about the McRib. But there are a lot of things that we love about fast food that were pretty much invented by a defunct burger chain. That's the story we've got. And then we've got some old dishes and recipes that nobody makes anymore, but they should. 312-981-7200 for old school dishes that you ate when you were growing up, that your mom made, your grandma made, that kind of stuff. 312-981-7200. So in the 60s and early 70s, McDonald's had a major competitor, Burger Chef, a burger chain that started in 1958. The chain was originally created by Donald and Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas would go on to be an all-star with the White Sox. Oh, not the same.
Heck of a career.
not the same one. Whose father started the General Equipment Company in the 1930s to manufacture machinery as fast food for fast food restaurants. Some of the products General Equipment made included the soft-serve ice cream machines. Soft-serve. I like soft-serve. Dan, do you enjoy a soft-serve?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. You got to enjoy a soft serve. But I enjoy the scoop of ice cream too. Let's see, soft serve ice cream machines and flame broiling equipment, which it patented in 1954. In 1957, the Thomas brothers decided to open a demonstration store to show how to best use the products. It became so successful that the brothers opened a number of others throughout the state. Using McDonald's as its inspiration, Burger Chef officially opened up as a restaurant in Indianapolis in 1958. One Reddit user described Burger Chef as, quote, a Dairy Queen burger with a salad bar you could pick from to load on top of it. Imagine a fast food restaurant with the appeal of a bowling alley without lanes and the taste of a high school cafeteria, and you get a clearer idea. How is it appealing to have a bowling alley without lanes?
Well, I mean, they're fun. I mean, those big wide open spaces, and I could see that, the ambiance of a bowling alley without lanes.
Okay. I don't know, because to me, a bowling alley without lanes defeats its own purpose.
Well, I mean, I don't think, but I think they're going for the ambiance of a bowling alley without the bowling.
All right, okay, fine. I'm sorry. The description to me, I was like, hey, you know what's fun? If you go to the bowling alley and they don't have lanes, that's fun. I totally misread that. You know why? I've had 3 minutes of sleep. I'm still thinking about Suspiria. All the gore and nudity in that movie is still right fresh in my mind. Another wrote, the burger was similar to a McDonald's hamburger, really nothing fancy or special, but recalling the experience, I can actually taste the hamburger and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Does anybody remember Burger Chef? I know we've talked about Burger Chef before. They're sort of a legendary place, but I'd never been there. Burger Chef was also the first restaurant chain to serve a burger fries drink combo called the Triple Threat, which cost just 45 cents, according to Time. It also pioneered the Works Bar, where customers could dress their own burgers with toppings and condiments. In 1967, Burger Chef was purchased by General Foods for $16 million. By 1969, it had 1,000 restaurants. While Burger Chef was at its peak, it introduced a concept most people associate with McDonald's, the kids' meal. In 1973, the Fun Meal was the first fast food meal to bundle burgers with a dessert and a toy. It also had a mascot and cartoon characters, including a magician named Burgerini. Oh, that's good. And a vampire named Count Fangburger. He was good friends with this guy.
That garlic gets me every time.
That's how he dresses his burger. He made the mistake of going to the salad bar and putting garlic on it. Let's see. In 1978, the chain partnered with Star Wars to create 7 different kids' meals. How do I know? How have I never been to a Burger Chef? I mean, we're into the 70s now. When McDonald's introduced its Happy Meal in 1979, Burger Chef sued on claims that the rival chain had appropriated the idea of its Fun Meal. Shortly after, in 1981, Burger Chef sued Burger King for its Fun School Meal and settled out of court when Burger King acknowledged Burger Chef's trademark, according to the Indianapolis Star. Burger Chef was struggling by this point. General Moods had expanded the chain very quickly, and hundreds of stores had closed throughout the 1970s. And in 1982, Hardee's bought the remaining 260 stores for $44 million, and almost all the Burger Chef's restaurants were closed and turned into Hardee's. We've talked about Burger Chef on the show before. I'm just trying to remember if I had ever been to one before. If there were any in the Chicago area, in the 70s and 80s. But there you go. They started everything, man. Yeah.
Search for Burger Chef Chicago does not indicate any Chicago locations. But it was founded in Indianapolis, which is...
Yeah. It's an area place right there. Burger Chef... Yeah, they opened up their first restaurant in 1958 after they did the demonstration store. So there they are. You could get the Triple Threat, which was the burger. Man, 45 cents for a burger, fries, and a drink. And there you go. So you have Burger Chef to thank. And you can thank a bowling alley with no lanes. That's another thing that you can. Oh, Burger Chef. So now they're all Hardee's. Hardee's is one of those. Hardee's and now Carl's Jr. Those, you know, two are the same company, and they have the most. When you know, Dan, whenever we talk about like insane burgers and menu items at fast food places, Hardee's and Carl's Jr., they have the most insane. Like, especially burgers. 14 pounds of bacon, you know, like 9 patties. And then they get some hot girl in a bikini to eat it, you know.
Although they've gone away from that trend.
They have, haven't they?
Yeah, they have now a spokesperson a la the Colonel and...
They do?
Yeah. He's played by a guy from that show Nashville that Eileen watched. That's the only reason I know this. But I think he goes by Carl. Carl Jr.
Really?
I think he's Carl Sr. in the ad.
Oh, wow.
And so they've kind of...
They've gone away from the sexy burger thing.
Yep.
Which is what they did, you know, constantly. Oh, all right. I didn't know that they had a spokes dude.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's part of that trend now where, you know, there's a Captain Morgan and all that stuff.
Right. Captain, 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 Captain.
Yeah, Carl Hardee Sr.
Carl Hardee. Oh, so they combined the two. They combined the two fast food places with their names, added Sr. instead of Jr.
In March 2017, Carl's Jr. released a commercial featuring a white-bearded character named Carl Hardee Sr., played by Charles Esteen of Nashville, who had come back into the office, much to the delight of the employees, to find a son, Carl Jr., who was focusing on sex appeal over its food. The commercial marked a turning point in the advertising. Uh-huh. And
so it got meta.
Yes. Carl Hardee Sr. is expected to become the new company spokesperson.
Okay.
2018, Carl's Jr. started a campaign featuring the voice of Academy Award winner Matthew McConaughey in the Call of Carl's campaign.
How do I not know this? How do I not know this? By the way, man, how many commercials is McConaughey doing now? Because he's obviously Lincoln, and those commercials are just incomprehensible. I'm a massive Matthew McConaughey fan. And I don't even understand those commercials. He's got Wild Turkey, right? He's a spokesman for Wild Turkey. And I didn't know he was a spokesman for Carl's Jr.
I like to think that he has a disdain for cash, you know, like cash money. And he just, like, anything he needs, he just barters.
Oh, yeah.
I need a car. I'm going to start.
He eats burgers and drinks whiskey.
Right.
And
Mr. Stone was hungry, so he called up Carl's Jr. and said, I need some burgers. Here we go.
It's time to answer the call. The oozing drips and the smacking lips. Snizzle, sizzle. Biggity wiggity buck wild beef busting straight out of the gate, showing his teeth like a flavor stampede. Crisp Eddie rings. Oh, whoa. Taking SLO. With the Western Bacon Cheeseburger. That's the Call of Carl's. Pick up.
What's the visual on that? Is he in the commercial?
No, he's not in the commercial. You know, it's close-ups of the burger, yeah, and people biting in their eyes, popping up loud. But
that I've never seen that before. Because I would have recognized, I mean, come on, I would have recognized McConaughey's voice.
Right, right.
That can't be local. They probably...
I don't know, you know, they really? Sometimes do, you know, Will Ferrell did that whole local thing for PBR.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the commercial, though, is this. I'm never going to say woo-wee the same way again.
Yeah, oh, man, oh, man. All right, all right, all right.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, I mean, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
They're on their way to the drive-thru right now.
We have Burger Chef text coming in. I'll print those for you break.
All right, we're going to break here. Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah! Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. Emo with the Doobie Brothers and South City Midnight Lady. Yeah, man. South City Midnight Lady, baby. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to talk, text, or your 2 for Tuesday request. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm Nick DiGilio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude here, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. It's 2 for Tuesday, and yeah. So we were just talking about Burger Chef, and we were talking about the innovations in that company. And, of course, we just now heard Matthew McConaughey doing some insane Carl's Jr. commercial, which I've never heard before. We've got a couple of texts here. Kathy says, my dad was stationed at Rantoul Air Force Base in Illinois in the 60s. There was a Burger Chef in town just down the street from the junior high that I attended. Oh, there you go. Kurt says there was a Burger Chef in Joliet. Carrie said, I loved Burger Chef as a kid. I love onions, and they let me put on as much as I wanted. Yes, you can load up, man. Burger Chef lets you load up. So there was one in Joliet. All right. I guess there wasn't one in this. I don't remember ever going to a Burger Chef. So I'm assuming there wasn't one in the city. And if there was in the suburbs, my parents and I never went there. So, all right. Well, there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So 25 dishes / recipes that no one makes anymore but should. What are some of the old school foods that you ate that nobody makes anymore? Or maybe you make every once in a while, but it's definitely old school. How about this? Cinnamon toast. Sugary and sweet cinnamon toast was always the perfect side for scrambled eggs and a fabulous after-school snack. Just toast some bread, spread it with butter, sprinkle with cinnamon and sugar. People don't do that anymore? I think people still do that. I think people still do that. And they have a cereal named after that. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. How about Dutch Baby Pancake? Cooking brunch at home? Consider bringing back this sugar-coated classic. Making a Dutch baby pancakes involves first baking a puffy egg souffle for a base, then adding a layer of fruits sprinkled with a generous amount of powdered sugar, cut into slices, and there's enough brunch for the whole family to enjoy. So it's a souffle with a bunch of fruit and powdered sugar. Where does the Dutch baby pancake? It's not a pancake, it's a souffle. Where does the name... Where does that name come from? Dutch baby pancake? That's weird. How about some lovely tea sandwiches? Dan, do you love tea sandwiches? When they went out for the tea, for the high tea, did they have tea sandwiches?
I'm sure they did, and their little cucumber things. I think those are disgusting, personally.
You can cut the miniature sandwiches any shape you like. Fill them with whatever your heart desires. The tea sandwiches, we remember, were made from white bread, filled with things like strawberry cream cheese or cucumbers and mayonnaise. Yeah, the cucumbers and the mayonnaise are the ones that I think that I remember. Fondue. Oh, fondue. I love fondue. Fondue's popularity peaked in the 70s, but there's nothing not to like about the appetizer. Oozing cheese, melted chocolate, bread for dipping, fondue is best enjoyed with a crowd to get some friends together and throw a fondue party. Give everybody a couple of forks and go nuts. There was a fondue restaurant. There was one on Foster or maybe Peterson. Foster or Peterson. I want to say Foster near, or not, it's Peterson. It was Peterson. I want to say Peterson near maybe Pulaski, perhaps. There was one there. I went to that one once, and then there was another one that was right by the Park West, right down the street from the Park West Theater, right by the. Dan, is that Ben and Jerry's still by the... Do you know if the Ben and Jerry's shop is still by the Park West?
I have not seen a Ben and Jerry's at the last time I went to the Park West. So, well, search Fondue Stube. Stube is 2717 West Peterson. So
that's it.
Yeah.
I was a little bit west. So it's like Kimball, Kedzie. Peterson and like Kedzie.
Yeah, Peterson between California and Western are the major
cross
streets.
So that's still there.
It is.
Now, what about the one, what street is the Park West on? That's on Armitage? No.
Doesn't it end at Lincoln? No, Lincoln's just right.
I think it's Armitage. Is it Armitage? But the fondue place there, it was like right down the street from the Park West Theater. And I remember going there with my girlfriend on our year anniversary. And that place was awesome. That place, the one on Peterson is good, but this one this was a long time ago though. This was like maybe 17 years ago we went.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna mispronounce this, but Gaja's Cafe. Gaja?
Yeah, I think that's it.
340 West Armitage.
Yeah, that's it. And that place was great because they had. Hey, have you gone to fondue? Have you gone to a fondue restaurant?
I have never gone to a fondue restaurant.
Here's the other thing that's really cool about at least at this place, because they'll give you got the dessert fondue, you know, with the vanilla and the chocolate, melted chocolate. You could dip sweet stuff in there and little donuts and stuff, and you can dip bread. Then you got the cheesy ones. Okay, it's fantastic. You can dip bread. You can dip other things in there. But they also would bring to the table, in addition to, you know, the hot chocolate and the hot cheese and stuff like that, they would bring you a vat of oil and raw meat, and you can dip the meat. Just take your fork and get a chunk of meat and dip it and deep fry it right in front of you and combine it with the cheese. Forget it, man. We stayed there for 16 hours. They couldn't get rid of us. No, the deep frying the meat thing was my favorite. That was my favorite part. So it was a good place, man. That was a good fondue place. Fondue. It's not just for 70s anymore. All right. Let's break because the news is coming up next. Two for Tuesday, everybody. Yeah! One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 815 area code requesting Steel Pulse with Roller Skates. Yeah, man. How's everybody doing? It is Wednesday. No, it's Tuesday. Oh, man. I've been up way too long, Dan, and I saw a really weird horror movie a few hours ago, and I'm starting to hallucinate. By the way, the remake of Suspiria, if you would have asked me this 3 months ago and said that I was going to say the following, the remake of Suspiria is great, I would have punched me in the face. But it's great. But it's really crazy. Like bat crap crazy. Like people will walk out crazy. And it's 2.5 hours long. It's 2.5 hours of complete insanity and gore and blood and nudity and dancing and cool stuff. So anyway, it's Tuesday. It's not Wednesday. Tomorrow is Wednesday. The reason why I had that in my head is because I wanted to talk a little bit about what we got on the show tomorrow. My future ex-wife is going to be on the show tomorrow. Dana DiLorenzo, star of Ash vs. Evil Dead. I love her, and so she's going to be on to talk about Ash vs. Evil Dead and scary stuff, just to have her on, because I love her. And so she's going to be on. We'll kick off Movember. We'll tell you all about how to kick off Movember and help men's health issues. And we'll talk about your favorite horror movies. We'll listen to some clips, play some horror music. We'll talk about your favorite scary books and favorite scary TV shows. And these guys will be there.
Trick or treat!
That's right.
The wind beneath my wings.
Yes. And they'll make an appearance on tomorrow's show, and then we have to put them back in storage for another year, or so less than a year, about 11 months.
Smell my fear. That one rattled my bolts.
That rattled his bolts. Well, he's going to give his bolts a rest after tomorrow's show. They do hang out in the office, though, Dan, and blast away in there with their snappies. What are they called? Slappies? Snappies?
Shreddies.
Shreddies. Oh, man. All right. So that's tomorrow's show. But right now we're talking about recipes or dishes that no one makes anymore. And I want to hear some old school dishes that your family had when you were younger and maybe you don't make it anymore, and it's full-on old school. We were just talking about fondue, and those two fondue restaurants are still around.
Yep.
That's pretty cool, man. I mean, it was a long time ago when I went to those. But it's cool that in 2018 there's the one by Park West there on Armitage is really good. So that's why I haven't been back in 17 years. No, but it is really just really good. So let's see. We got some texts coming in. Dan in Michigan says Lipton onion soup dip. My mom used to make it when we were kids. Oh yeah, come on, you got to love that. Potato chips and dip, man, with the onion soup dip. You can't. It's fantastic. 708 area code says, my mom would make liver and onions at least twice a month. If we were lucky, we would eat crispy bacon with it. Oh, man. I'm going to drool all over the floor here. Liver and onions, man. Come on. Trevor from Antioch says, shepherd's pie and meatloaf. My mom makes the best meatloaf. I would ask her to make it for my birthday dinner. You going old school, man. How about this? Apricot chicken. There are literally hundreds of ways to make boring chicken breast into an exciting weeknight dinner, but apricot chicken should make a comeback. The tangy, sweet flavor of apricot jam elevates breaded or crusted chicken tenders to the next level. Apricot chicken. All right. I don't think I've ever made apricot chicken. Made a lot of different chicken dishes and had a lot of different chicken dishes. Don't think I've ever made apricot chicken. You ever have apricot chicken, Dan?
I have not. I'm sorry, I distracted. 773 lets us know the Rock and Roll McDonald's does not have a McRib. Does not have the McRib. He or she just drove there.
Are you kidding me? How does the Rock and Roll McDonald's not have the McRib? And is it still called? It's not called the Rock and Roll McDonald's anymore, is it? It's called, like, newfangled, fancy McDonald's. Because there's no rock and roll stuff there anymore. It looks like it's futuristic. Looks like Logan's Run. Does it have a new name?
It's according to Wikipedia, yeah. So grain of salt, of course. Even though the redesigned restaurant will have no rock and roll theme, McDonald insiders still refer to the location as The Rock.
The Rock? Who refers to it as The Rock?
McDonald's insiders, thank you very much.
Come on, man. The Rock. It was never The Rock. It was always The Rock and Roll McDonald's. The Rock. Yeah, well. But still, that's pretty ridiculous that they don't have a McRib. I can't believe that they don't have, like, people picketing outside of The Rock complaining that there is no McRib. How can The Rock not have a McRib? And I mean Dwayne Johnson when I say that. So. Oh, boy. All right, how about this? There's another dish or recipe that nobody really makes anymore. Sweet and sour meatballs. This still is made. This is definitely old school, but people still, I love this. Mini meatballs used to be a popular party appetizer. Sweet and sour sauces usually included barbecue sauce and some kind of fruit like a pineapple or a citrus. This odd variety used grape jelly. Despite how strange they sound, these little bites were delicious. That's got to be still around, right? Those were fantastic. Yeah, we used to do I used to have those all the time. The barbecue sauce and the grape jelly is what I remember, because it does seem weird. But they're good. Did you ever have the sweet and sour meatballs, Dan?
I have not.
Man, they're good. I'm telling you right now. Let's see. How about beef stroganoff? Yeah, that's old school, and I love beef stroganoff. It sure doesn't look pretty, but beef stroganoff is a cozy, comforting classic we want back on our dinner table now. Beef stroganoff was popular back in the 50s and involves generous portion of pasta, usually egg noodles, to best soak up the sauce, topped with a creamy blend of mushrooms and beef. Yeah, I love beef stroganoff. Yeah. Beef stroganoff is good. Yeah, man, you don't eat it enough. Do people make, does anybody make beef stroganoff out there? Does anybody have a good recipe for beef stroganoff? They still make it? 312-981-7200. How about this? Chicken cordon bleu. This French-inspired dish made a comeback in America in the 90s, but has fallen out of fashion since. It's an easy-to-make chicken dinner, and it is a crowd-pleaser always. It's typically made of baked breaded chicken stuffed with layers of ham or and cheese. And that's followed by chicken Kiev. Chicken Kiev is actually named after the city of Kiev in Ukraine. Even though it probably was cooked up in France, chicken breasts are coated with breadcrumbs and stuffed with garlic butter and bacon. By the way, chicken cordon bleu and chicken Kiev are available in your frozen aisle. I have some in my freezer as we speak right now. I have, and you put them in the oven. You cook them for like 35 minutes, and you've got chicken Kiev. And there's nothing quite as awesome as, like, cutting into a chicken Kiev and all that butter just pouring out all over the place. So, you know, it might not be homemade chicken cordon bleu or chicken Kiev, but you can still get them. They come in the little, I think they're like a buck a piece or something. They're really cheap. Throw them in the oven for, like, a half an hour, and you got yourself some chicken Kiev and chicken cordon bleu. They also have the chicken with broccoli is another one. It's stuffed with broccoli. And then buffalo chicken, which stuffed with cheese, and but it's got like a buffalo flavor. So I mean, it's not homemade. So you know, granted, it isn't homemade, but you throw it in the you have to throw it in the microwave. You put it in the oven, so it's actually a warm cooked piece of meat with all kinds of crazy stuff in it. But I love the chicken Kiev. I'm a fan. So. All right, we're going to break here on 720 WGN. We've been talking about old recipes or old dishes, old school food that we would love to see make a comeback. And are people making some of these things? The sweet and sour meatballs, are they around? The grape jelly with the barbecue and beef stroganoff, are people still making that? 312-981-7200. Welcome back. Dan, I'm a little distracted. Friends is on.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Roberts and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yes.
What the hell is going on?
That was the time that Matthew Perry was allegedly dating Julia Roberts.
Oh, okay.
And
because they had a wacky scene in a bathroom stall where she took his clothes and left him in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then now Courtney Cox is just walking down the street with Van Damme. I'm like, what the hell is happening on this show?
That was the stretch where every guest star in the world was on.
Oh, okay.
Including grumpy Sean Penn.
Uh-huh. Jean-Claude Van Damme? By the way, do you not love those Tostitos commercials?
I finally saw it the other day. They are fantastic.
They're unbelievably hilarious. They're hilarious. They're hilarious. And I don't know whose idea it was, because it's not a great idea. Like, on paper, that's not a good idea. You walk into the Tostitos head office and go, I got an idea. Jean-Claude Van Damme should sell our product. What? But it works. Those commercials are hilarious. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Yeah! 312-981-7200, 815 area code on 2 for Tuesday. Steel Pulse with the Handsworth Revolution. And Steve Grzanich is coming up at 5 o'clock and Steve Cochran at 6 o'clock. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We've been talking about sort of old school dishes and old school recipes that aren't around anymore. Sweet and sour meatballs and appetizers, beef stroganoff, chicken cordon bleu, fondue. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I suggested steak birds, which I don't make anymore. And at Christmas time, I used to make 1,400 cookies, some of which were pecan dassies and Starlight Mint surprises. At that time, we used to have another newspaper, the Chicago Daily News, which around Christmas time would publish all of these wonderful cookie recipes. And of course, that's gone.
Yeah, no more Daily News. But 14,000 cookies?
No, 1,400.
Oh, 1,400. I was going to say. It's still a lot. 1,400 is still a lot.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I used to love cooking and baking.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds pretty cool. Old recipes. 1,400 cookies right around the holidays. All right, Elizabeth, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We got some texts coming in. 815 area code. Blank on a shingle. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like chipped beef on toast. I don't think anybody actually makes these. Dan, I don't think anybody actually makes this stuff from scratch, but almost every one of these things that we've mentioned, you can get, like, frozen.
Right.
And throw it in the microwave. Throw it in the microwave. 815 area code says, I miss my mom's goulash. It was simply elbow macaroni, ground beef, tomato sauce, and then salt and pepper to taste. 815 area code says, growing up, I thought fish only meant fish sticks. Friday night dinner. I was an adult before I ever had a real piece of fish. So thinking that fish sticks was actually all fish.
Or that fish only came in stick form.
Yeah, and 765 area code says, what about stuffed cabbage? Yeah, stuffed cabbage is good. 847 area code, tuna noodle casserole. I like tuna noodle casserole. I know a lot of people can't stand it. I love it. My mom used to make that. All right, how about this? Manicotti. There is no shortage of dishes made with pasta and cheese, but manicotti is a forgotten favorite. The pasta to cheese ratio is divine. One tunnel of pasta stuffed to the brim with ricotta and then topped with a layer of mozzarella and tomato sauce. My mom still makes that. What's going on here? My mom still makes that. you can still make that. It's not like that's tricolor pasta salad. Remember these? These salads weren't really salads at all. They were a classic side dish from the good old days when the spinach in green-colored pasta counted as a vegetable. Perfect for picnics, barbecues, or just a quick side for dinner at home. These pasta salads were usually made with Italian dressing and add-ins like olives and diced ham. Yeah. The tricolor pasta salad. You can get that. You can get that at the Jewels. You can get that at Chef's Kitchen. They've got all those macaroni salads and pasta salads at the Jewels that you can get. The classic macaroni salad. You know the one I'm talking about, Dan? Like the
oh sure
the sort of
the creamy
creamy you know mayonnaise based macaroni salad. I love that stuff. Love that stuff. So. Yeah, you can still get those. Those sides are available right now. You can go to Chef's Kitchen right now at the Jewels at the deli counter. Tell them Nick sent you, and they'll punch you right in the mouth. How about Sloppy Joes? Come on, man. People still make Sloppy Joes. Do people not make Sloppy Joes? Am I missing something here? What about Manwich? Don't people still buy Manwich? Am I missing something, Dan? Or has that gone blasé? Manwich, Sloppy Joe's? Nobody makes that stuff anymore?
I was surprised to see this on the list. We make Sloppy Joe's, maybe once a month.
Yeah. It's not like they're, but you know, it's impossible. You just ground beef and Manwich and get some buns and go nuts. They first came around in the 30s during the Great Depression as a way to save meat. They also got a bad reputation when they were served as a subpar school lunch, but when you make them right, these sandwiches taste great. Yes, they do. Enjoy a good Sloppy Joe. What's the matter with you people? We got a whole bunch of texts coming in here. 312-981-7200. Luke says, my grandma used to make German potato salad. It was awesome. She would also make homemade hamburger patties with onion and fry them in bacon fat. See, now that's food. That's just food right there. German potato salad. Oh, that's the good stuff. Bacon fat. Anything with bacon fat, immediately. Good. And good for you. I don't care. Canadian Bill says, "What about anything with Jello salad and fruit? And Jello salad and fruit salad? Yes. See now there. Now when we start getting into the Jello stuff, that's old and not. The Jello stuff was just weird. You know, Dan, have you ever seen the Jello like cook those cookbooks?
Oh my God, it's disgusting.
This is the weirdest stuff ever. And it's the weird. It's just that, and also the vegetable flavored Jello that they would use, and that would be for weird recipes. Like you're not going to eat like, hey, I'm going to get a nice big slab of celery Jello, but you would use it as a flavoring in a weird recipe. But everything was, you know, back in like the 50s, man, and in the 60s, if you look at those old recipe books, gelatin was everywhere, man. If there was no gelatin involved, it you know, nobody ate it. I don't know what this obsession was with like Jello and gelatins that was used in weird, crazy recipes that were looked inedible. Yeah, those are the Jello salad, the fruit salad. That's just weird stuff. 773 area code says, does anybody still make Hamburger Helper? They used to have a good beef stroganoff Hamburger Helper. Yeah, beef stroganoff. You know, Hamburger Helper is they still sell that. How about, you remember, Dan, in Vacation, when Cousin Eddie is like, we got Hamburger Helper, but I think it works out pretty well by itself. They're eating Hamburger Helper without the hamburger. 262 area code says, beef stroganoff rules. I agree. 847 area code says, I make meatballs with grape jelly and chili sauce all the time. The good. Thank you, everybody, for confirming that we're not, you know, that I'm not living in 1910. Jay says, Colony House Rest Camp in Lake Wisconsin has beef stroganoff on the menu. Ooh. 262 area code, beef borscht with beers, onions, potatoes, tomatoes. Oh, man, I'm making myself hungry. You and me both, pal. All right. It's nice to see. Look at that. I make meatballs with grape jelly, chili sauce all the time. Beef stroganoff rules. German potato salad. Bacon fat fried hamburger patties. Oh, man. That's stick to your ribs right there and go right to your waist. All right. We'll take a break here. The news is coming up next. If you want to jump in, we got more of these recipes that nobody's making anymore. Or they are, and I don't understand what this article is trying to prove. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and 2 for Tuesday requests. 312-981-7200. Harold, and he has requested Thurl Ravenscroft with Grim Grinning Ghosts. So there you day. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. If you would like to join us, we are talking about dishes or recipes that are kind of old school that people don't make anymore, even though we were discovering that a lot of people are making some of these. But then we got into that weird Jello, the Jello disgusting recipes. And, Dan, these recipes are just, my parents still have the old like Jello, like the cookbooks. Not really the cookbooks, but they were like pamphlets. Really, they weren't like big regular hardbound cookbooks. And they the most ridiculous things. I mean, so this is from Business Insider. Check out these disgusting recipes from the glory days of Jello. And I still don't understand. I still don't understand the obsession with gelatin.
Well, if I remember correctly, about a time that we talked about, like, a lot of these were produced post-war, where Jell-O was something that everybody still had access to,
yeah.
And, you know, was a little bit of a treat, but just kind of like that Depression-era mentality where, like, all right, we got to do something.
Right. Yeah, we got to deal with, you know, we have to make this stretch, you know, and I can understand that, but I don't know if I could develop a taste for some of these things. And I realize that, you know, might have been easier to get and harder to get some other better items, but I don't know, man. I just, some of these recipes. All right, Jell-O salad. It calls for pineapple, lime or lemon flavored Jell-O, vinegar, onion, pepper, and 2 cups of your favorite veggies. No. How about this? Red roll. It contains tomato and vinegar, while the green one is mint and pineapple. They're advertised as the perfect complement to a fine steak dinner. What? I remember seeing pictures of these things, too. Oh, this is the one right here. This is the one right here. Ring around the tuna. It contains chunks of tuna, pimentos, and cucumbers all molded into a lime Jell-O. You kidding me? Tomato aspic calls for lemon Jell-O, tomato juice, hot sauce, and vinegar. That one I don't know if I would hate. I don't know. The flavor combinations there seem okay. I mean, I don't know about the...
What is aspic?
Aspic is gelatin. Fish Jell-O. This recipe card says you can fish for compliments with this salad. It calls for cutting vegetables like cucumbers and carrots into fish shapes and molding them into lime Jell-O. And then the finishing touch, why, layers of Hellman's mayonnaise. This is disgusting. The coffee Jell-O, it's supposed to impress guests at a fine dinner party. Coffee Jell-O. Perfection salad. How about this? Perfection salad calls for lemon Jell-O, cabbage, cucumbers, tomatoes, carrots, onions, and vinegar. The veggies are artfully set as you serve to the guests. That's the perfection salad. Sounds like perfection to me. How about the crusted tomato salad? Calls for lemon or orange Jell-O, tomatoes, and cucumbers set in this artful mold to impress your lunch party guests. How about Bavarian pie? Instead of using real strawberries and cream, you can mold strawberry Jell-O and Cool Whip into a beautiful form. A seasonal souffle salad. You start with a lime Jell-O base and then add walnuts, grapes, and mayonnaise, garnish with more mayo on top. And then finally, we got some seafood. Jell-O saw it fit to lead off an entire section of a 1960s cookbook with dishes that are based on seafood, the top one being Sea Dream, which involves setting your shrimp cocktail in lime Jell-O. So those are just some of the disgusting recipes from the glory days of Jell-O. I don't understand. I really don't. Look at this. We got more texts coming in. 312-981-7200. 608 area code said, how about chicken a la king? Classic. Classic comfort food. Classic. 630 area code, fried Spam. I enjoy a fried Spam. Two, three, one area code says tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich. People still eat that, right? That's the classic comfort go-to lunch. Kids still eat the grilled cheese and the tomato soup. 815 area code says cowboy chow, which was ground beef and pork and beans. That sounds fantastic. I would eat that for 4 months straight.
Is that what Fartenstein and Farchella eat for 11 months in order to be ready for Halloween time?
That's exactly right. That's why they're so gaseous. Just a bunch of cowboy chow. We have it in the office. We just have an endless supply of cowboy chow in the office.
I was wondering why you kept that campfire going.
Yeah. 920 area code says, I miss my grandma's German potato salad. She always used at least 3 pounds of bacon. I love that, man. I love the old school recipes that are just like, you go back and you look at some of these recipes, and like, and today when everybody's a lot more health conscious, or at least they pretend to be, you'd be outraged by how much unhealthy stuff you're putting into these classic recipes. I mean, it's every other thing had bacon fat in it. Three 312 area code says, I've not had sloppy joes since attending Chicago public schools. There are better, way better dishes to make with quality beef. Yeah, but sloppy joes are good, man. You were eating them at Chicago public schools. I had sloppy joes at Chicago public schools. Yeah. We used to have the, you know what we used to have? Hey, Dan, you know what we used to have? As one, which was one of my one of the weirdest and my favorite lunches at Hamilton at the Chicago Public School.
What was that?
Back in the 70s. It was a baked cheese sandwich.
Mm.
So it wasn't grilled. It was open face baked. It was an open face baked cheese sandwich. It was basically like a piece of government cheese on top of probably just a square piece of white bread. They would stick it into the broiler for a little while, and you would have a little crust on it. Like it would have like a kind of the cheese would brown up and get a little crust going, and then you would eat it like pizza. I used to love it. It was so government cheese. Because the way that the government cheese tastes and melts is so incredibly distinctive. Like, you know the difference. You've ever had government cheese, you know what it tastes like. And this would be baked. And I would trade people for it because kids hated it. Everybody hated it. All my friends, everybody had hated it. Whenever it was like baked government cheese white bread day, everybody was just like, oh, God. And I would end up eating everybody else's. I loved that stuff, man. I loved it. And that was, obviously that was back in the 70s. That was back in the 70s, and it was not a popular lunch item except with me. I was the only person that really liked it, and I loved it. It was not grilled. It was not a grilled cheese. There was no butter or anything. But maybe they put a little butter on it. I'm not sure. But it was broiled. It was like broiled, and it was in the oven. And it was, oh, man, it was so bad and good. What's that? Yeah. People would just give it to me, Dan. They wouldn't even ask for anything in return. Here, just take it. Get it off my plate. Get it out of here. And I would have I would have like a stack of baked government cheese pieces of bread on my plate. On my plate, which of course was sectioned off for your veggies, and your milk. It was a little plastic. It was a little plastic tray, like prison. So. Oh, man. Does anybody remember that? Am I the only one that remembers that? That was Chicago Public School. I went to Alexander Hamilton School in Lakeview, and that was like a featured every couple of weeks. Every couple of weeks, they would do the baked open-face government cheese sandwich, which was a favorite of mine. So, all right, let's take a break. We got weather here, and then we'll come back and talk more about these old-school recipes that nobody likes or they should like or they're not making anymore. 312-981-7200. Welcome back. Very Halloween festive music that we've got going here on Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday! 312-981-7200. Harold requesting Thurl Ravenscroft with the Headless Horseman. And again, reminding you, tomorrow, Wednesday, is our 21st annual Halloween Spooktacular, where we're going to talk all things scary. Movies, TV shows, your favorite horror movies, and books. We'll also play some clips, and we'll listen to some scary music. And my future ex-wife, the one, the only, the lovely, the very lovely, Dana DiLorenzo, is going to join us, star of Ash vs. Evil Dead. She knows a thing about horror or two. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about these sort of like old-school recipes and dishes that no one makes anymore, even though we're discovering that some people are indeed making them. And then we went through some of these reasonably disgusting Jell-O recipes, actual real Jell-O recipes from like the 50s and 60s. They're really, if you you can look these things up online. I described some of them, but some of the visuals are just, really unbelievable. So we've got more of that, and we got a ton of texts coming in, and let's talk with Jessica on WGN. Hi, Jessica.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
All right, what's up?
So when I had my 8th grade Lutheran confirmation, my mom, I think she was trying to be fancy, but we were kind of white trash growing up, so it ended up not being that fancy. She made what I can only describe as a sandwich cake with five different kinds of sandwiches. So she took that same nasty old white bread. She made a ham salad sandwich, a roast beef. There was even a peanut butter and jelly. She shoved them in a loaf pan, and she dumped it out so it was kind of in a mold, like a loaf, I guess, and then frosted it with a combo of Cool Whip and Manny.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah, not good. And I think, you know, she, like I said, she was trying to maybe do our Northwest Indiana version of, like, tea time for all the old ladies from the church that came. And she, to top it off, she did make a side seven-layer salad that definitely had a layer of lime green Jello.
Oh, of course
in it
did.
To go with the Satan cake loaf.
Wow. Oh my God. Now, did you have to use silverware to eat it?
Yeah, like, she sliced it like a cake, but you got this evil cross-section of, like, Spam salad, PB&J, roast beef and cheese, and then of course, the Cool Whip. It may not have even been Hellman's. It could have been Miracle Whip.
Oh, my God.
And Cool
Whip
together.
That's really crazy. That is absolutely crazy. Wow.
Dude, she's a child of the 50s, so
yeah.
I think it was probably fancy back then, and
yeah.
It was not something anybody signed up to eat at that event.
Wow, that is, that's amazing. That's really amazing. I would love to find a recipe for that.
No, you wouldn't.
All right, Jessica.
No, you wouldn't.
Thanks for the
love
call.
Love your show.
All right,
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Doesn't that sound unbelievable, Dan? Take a bunch of sandwiches, slam them together, put it in a loaf pan, dump it out, frost it with Cool Whip and Miracle Whip and mayonnaise, slice up and eat. You'll get some ham salad, maybe some peanut butter, little roast beef. That's fantastic. Let's see. Here's Trucker Gordon. Hi, Gordon.
Hey, Nick. How are you doing?
All right, buddy. What's up?
Hey, not much. You know, you can get beef stroganoff at Noodles & Company.
Oh, they have Noodles & Company has it? Oh, okay.
Yep. And it's really good, too. Not as good as homemade, but it's good.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And my mom used to make this thing called raisin chicken. It's where she would take a whole chicken, slather it with butter, put it in a pan, cover it with raisins, and bake it. And then you would use the drippings as a gravy on your mashed potatoes or whatever.
With raisins. How did that taste?
It tasted okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. If you like the sweet and almost like a sweet and salty thing.
Yeah.
Sweet
yeah.
and savor.
Okay.
Yeah. First time my wife tried it, I thought she was going to throw up.
Not so good for the wife, but you grew up on it, so that's the difference, right?
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
And those chicken things you buy at Jewel, I cook them in the truck here. They're made by Dutch Farms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a truck driver. I go to Chicago, Nashville, and back three times a week, and I listen to you every night.
Oh.
And I cook those in my truck while I'm driving.
Yeah. No, they're cheap, and you know it's not homemade, but you know it's you can cook it in the oven. It's got a nice crispy cut to it, and I think they're tasty.
Yeah, me too. Not like a good hot meal after a long night of driving.
All right. Stay safe out there, Gordon. Okay, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, have a good one.
Take care. Thanks for listening too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Nick.
Hi.
Growing up, my mom would make liver and onions and salmon patties.
Salmon patties. Oh, the old salmon patties. I know the salmon
those
patties.
Those were the two things that kept me at the dinner table all night long.
Because you wouldn't eat them. You wouldn't eat them, yeah.
Find out.
That's hilarious. That's really funny. Yeah. Chris, thanks, man. You're not leaving the table until you finish. I'm not eating these salmon patties. I don't care if I have to sit here till Thursday. I will not eat these salmon patties. Again, though, you know, as I've said before, Dan, that was not a problem for my folks. You can put salmon patties in front of me, and I'd eat them. As a kid, it was weird because my friends thought I was a weirdo. Hey, look, I'm the one that was trading up for the baked government cheese on a. An open face sandwich. That's what I was trading up for. You're out of your mind. So, all right. I would love to hear from anybody else here. 312-981-7200 if you, yeah.
We do have government baked cheese texts coming
oh,
in
we
after,
do?
After the break here.
That's what you call a tease right there. When you
stay
let
tuned,
people know,
everybody.
When you let people know they have to stay tuned to talk about government baked cheese, that's good radio. The reason I got that plaque on that sidewalk across the river, I'm telling you, it's because of the government yep. cheese I ate when I was a kid.
You haven't seen those people eating the government cheese and crackers around the, you know, they gather around
the Walk of Fame? Oh, that's cool. I'm glad I've inspired some government cheese eating. All right. Let's take a break here on WGN. The news is coming up after this. Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah! And Trucker Rich with Cream, Sunshine of Your Love, right there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio here. We're here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And we've been talking about old recipes that nobody makes anymore, and some of them are disgusting. Some of them are pretty awesome, and they're bringing back a lot of memories. Recipes that people don't make anymore, or dishes that they don't make anymore. And let's see. We've got a bunch of texts coming in. And let's see. Peanut butter and marshmallow fluff sandwiches. 630 area code. I don't know if I can abide by that. Or no, I can. Here's Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Will you do that stereotypical DJ voice? The echo box makes me laugh every time.
thank you. I appreciate that.
Every time. That's me, Kevin Matthews. But my favorite was peanut butter and Miracle Whip. I mean, people think it's gross, but the flavors together were great. And we didn't have a lot of money, so it was either that or peanut butter and jelly. But, man, I loved it. People are like, oh, that's so gross. I'm like, yeah, you go ahead and try it. You would like it.
I've never tried it. I like both of those substances. So I've never tried them together, but I like them separately.
Yeah, it's like the two. It's always sweet and salty. People, it's all the different variations, but it's one of those things. They go well together.
Okay. All right. We'll try that out. Brian, thanks, buddy.
No problem, brother.
Take care. There you go. Hey, I noticed. I wanted to see if Mary wants to come in on this for a second, see if she's got some weird recipes that she grew up with. Yeah. Okay. She's getting ready. And before that, it says 312 area code says, Nick, you're doing it again. I'm heading out to the kitchen to raid the refrigerator. How about homemade spaghetti sauce on the stove for a few hours? I still make cabbage rolls in pierogi Polish style. Everyone asks for them. And they are very time-consuming. 630 area code says, gelatin has bone marrow in it. It was used because milk wasn't available in stores. That's true. Mary?
You know, my mom made Jell-O all the time with the fruit in it.
Uh-huh.
And I think I brought this up before. We called it, we had a name for it.
Mm-hmm.
My dad did anyway, called Litsa Poopa. And we thought that this, my dad spoke Flemish, you know, and we thought this was a Flemish word for Jell-O. So he had us go my entire life. I'm not kidding. We're having Litsa Poopa. And then the grandkids started to love the Litsa Poopa. And my mom would bring it out. She'd make it for every occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And we either had it for dessert or, you know, during whatever the meal. And it went with everything.
Right.
Whether we were having hamburgers or, you know, steak.
Yeah.
She'd bring out the Litsa Poopa.
Litsa Poopa.
And it wasn't until later that my dad finally admitted that he made the word up.
Yeah.
Just to be funny. My dad was a hilarious guy. And
yeah.
He just made it up to be funny.
Litsa Poopa. Yeah, no, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
It was a great word. We're all like, how do you spell it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just made it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got more text here. 309 area code says, I lived in a fraternity in college that made our own food. We had different cooking duties. Our recipe book included 90% of the foods that you've listed, and they were all abominations. 262 area code says, when I graduated from high school in 1978, my mom made Jell-O eggs to decorate the relish tray for my party. Also, try half chili sauce and half cranberry sauce for the mini meatballs. Those are yummy. How about that? Do you ever have the mini meatballs, Mary? The mini meatballs that are like sort of barbecue, but they also have like grape jelly.
We had Swedish meatballs.
Oh, well, those are great.
My mom always made Swedish meatballs.
Yeah.
And spinach and eggs was another weird thing we had.
Oh, there's nothing weird about that.
Really? Did you have spinach and eggs?
I mean, I like a spinach omelet.
No. This was spinach cooked with mashed potatoes mixed together. So you mix the spinach with the mashed potatoes, and then you put an egg on top of it, a hard-boiled egg.
I would eat that. I would eat that all day long.
We had it on a lot of Fridays with Lent.
Oh.
And to this day, my brother just loved it.
No, I would eat that. Those are all things I love.
Awesome.
Let's see. Judy in Burbank saying, my mom used to make salmon patties in a cream pea sauce on Fridays, and it was totally awesome. And 815 area code says, hi, Nick. You make me laugh so hard today. Thank you. My grandma Carlson made pasties. She made pasties. She worked in a strip club. Pasties, and she lived in the upper part of Michigan. 262, what about Baked Alaska? I've only had Baked Alaska once. I liked it, but it was a little weird. 773 area code, what about Green Goddess salad dressing? Nobody makes that anymore, do they? Green Goddess?
Oh, I remember that.
Me too.
It was Green Goddess. Did you make it yourself?
No, I would get, they would have it in restaurants and stuff.
No, it was like craft. Yeah,
yeah.
Green Goddess.
Yeah. 815 area code said, what about pie when everyone used lard for crust? Yeah. You got to have the lard in there.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta. How about this? 847. My mom's family was Swedish, and a favorite dinner was homemade Swedish meatballs with mashed potatoes, canned green beans, or corn. I love you and your show. Thank you.
Sounds exactly like the meal I had.
Yep.
815
area code, casseroles of any kind are old school. Yeah, we've talked about casseroles many times in the past. We were talking about the green barf just not too long ago.
The bean barf.
Bean barf, sorry. Green barf. I was thinking The Exorcist.
No. That's
773 area code says, my mother used to make the best macaroni and cheese from government cheese. Yeah. 815 area code says, I do remember government cheese and baked cheese sandwiches from school. I'm glad somebody else remembers it. Only when my uncle gave me a brick of his government cheese. I took it to the country club that I worked at when I was an apprenticing chef. I made baked cheese sandwiches for the other chefs and myself one day. They all loved them, and they wanted to know where I stumbled upon this recipe. It's just government cheese, man. Stumbled upon it at public school. That's where I stumbled upon it. 815 area code says, my mom would fry pork chops and always make gravy bread from the drippings. No wonder we all have high cholesterol today. 312 area code says, what about fruit cocktail? Because we'd all fight for the half cherry.
I love the fruit cocktail. That's what my mom put in the Litzepooper.
Oh.
The fruit cocktail.
She put the fruit cocktail in the Litzepooper.
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 Oh, sorry. I don't speak Flemish.
I still don't know how to spell it. So,
Scooter from Cicero said, we called that toasted cheese. My mom made that for my lunch almost three times a week in the 70s. We went home for lunch at about 11:50 to 12:50, and we watched Bozo, then back to school. I often did the same thing. 312 area code. How about an open-faced broiled sandwich? You use light wheat or white bread. Use thin Gala apples. Then you add one slice of white cheddar cheese. Top it all off with a slice of crispy fried bacon, which you cut in half and lay crisscross on top. Broil it till the cheese bubbles. Watch out because it burns fast, I bet. Yeah. Kathy says, my mom made chop suey a lot. La Choy had the dinner kit. Oh, yeah, with the cans. You guys remember the La Choy cans?
The can on the top of the can, then you had to, and the strip in the middle.
Right. You peel it off, and then they take the can off.
I did not like that stuff at all. It's awful. It's still around.
It's still around. Yeah. Absolutely. It was two cans. One can had the Chinese vegetables. The other can had the chow mein noodles. And then you would add meat and rice. Keith in Kansas said, I loved salmon patties and government cheese. See, there's a lot of love for government cheese. Mary, ever had government cheese?
No, I never had to have.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
The government cheese.
Public school, government cheese, I'm telling you.
Well, I suppose I did have it in the cafeteria at some point.
Yeah.
In the burbs.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On my cheeseburger.
Your cheeseburger.
My favorite thing.
We used to have the...
tots.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you, this government cheese is a special thing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
It's very special.
I'm telling you.
With a lot of special ingredients added.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have another one another recipe that a lot of people don't make anymore, and that's Salisbury steak. You can get that frozen.
Is that like cube steak?
It's
we always had cube steak.
Now cube steak is a different is different. Salisbury steak is ground beef essentially.
Yeah, well, cube steak's not much better.
Yeah, but cube steak is actually a piece of meat, whereas Salisbury steak is basically, you know, it's a hamburger. It's like ground. It's like beef that's been formed into like a Salisbury steak with different seasonings and brown gravy.
I kind of thought that was cube steak too, in a way.
Yeah.
But I always fed it to the dog.
The cube steak?
It's horrible.
Well, it's a real cheap cut of meat.
Oh,
I mean, cube steak is a really cheap cut of meat.
My mom stretched that, boy.
Yeah. Well, you got a lot of kids, man. Yeah. You know, that's what you got to do. All right, let's take a break here for weather, and we'll wrap up the conversation here with weird recipes or old school recipes that you grew up on that aren't around anymore. All right, welcome back, everybody. That wraps up Two for Tuesday for this week.
Yeah!
We'll do it again next Tuesday. Trucker Rich closing us out with Cream, of course, his White Room. 312-981-7200. If you would like to jump in here, we are talking about recipes that are old school that some people hate. Bringing back some childhood memories, and some people still don't make them. Again, coming up, by the way, at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, Steve Cochran at 6, and coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Let's see. What about pot pie? This is another one that people listed. It's not the healthiest thing that you can serve for dinner, but a pot pie is cozy and comforting to the max. A flaky crust filled with creamy sauce and chicken. There's a reason it's a family favorite. If you really search, you can find some vegetables hiding in all those carbs and cream. Peas and carrots, usually. And maybe even some green beans. I like the pot pie, you know, that has the crust on the bottom. Because I always feel like I got ripped off if the crust is only on the top. Know what I mean? That's not, to me, that's not really a pie. Gotta have the bottom crust. So, 708 area code says, I'm of Ukrainian descent. I miss my mother's borscht. It included beets, lima beans, onions, potatoes, and sometimes for a special treat, she would throw in a pig's foot or some kind of meat. Tried to duplicate the recipe, but I've not been able to. And we've talked about that many times in the past, Dan, as you know. Like, if you like that, if you have a special sort of dish that your mom made that you love, it's very difficult to recreate.
Yeah, you never get it quite right.
Yeah. 815 area code says, your topic this morning is giving me horrible flashbacks of being a kid. First, salmon patties. My mom made those as well, except she never deboned the canned salmon before forming the patties. To this day, I've never bought canned salmon, ever.
Oh. She left the bones
in. Next, liver and onions, guaranteed to get me a spanking and sent to bed hungry. Next, stuffed bell peppers. I would eat the insides but refuse to eat the peppers. Spanking and sent to bed. But at least I ate something. Thanksgiving stuffing. Why my mom thought stuffing needed to have things like raisins, grapes, apple chunks, and walnuts is beyond me. I would just pick through all that minefield of fruit and undercooked onions for the bread parts. Yeah. Again, no issues in that department for me. I never, you know, got sent to bed early or anything like that. They would put a plate of liver and onions in front of me, and I'd eat the whole thing. 708 area code says, in the 50s and 60s, my mom would make a dessert called prune whip. It was fresh whipped cream mixed with pureed prunes. It was a real treat, but was probably meant to help the plumbing run smoothly. Yeah. That doesn't sound bad. I'd eat that. Prune whip? 312 area code says, I had a classmate back in elementary school that used to bring jelly and cheese sandwiches for lunch. So weird. Yeah, that is a little weird. 630 area code says, we ate creamed eggs on toast once a week in the 60s. It was a white sauce with sliced hard-boiled eggs over toast. I still make it, just not so often. That sounds good. I'd eat that. Jesse says both government cheese and butter were terrible. The cheese was oily. It didn't melt right. The butter melted, and it smelled funny. And when it was cold, it didn't spread well. 630 area code says, thanks, Nick. I went to the store to get chicken Kiev. Oh, well, enjoy your chicken Kiev. How about scallop potatoes? By the way, I make killer scallop potatoes. Like, killer. Looking for a new way to cook potatoes? Enjoy a blast from the past. Whip up a cheesy tray of scallop potatoes. Who wouldn't love to eat layers of starchy sliced potato mixed with tons of herbs, butter, and cheese? We're not sure why this dish ever fell out of favor. It didn't. People eat scalloped potatoes all the time. It's one of the most popular side dishes at the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Did you ever have their scallop? Damn,
no,
scalloped potatoes.
Not.
Oh, man. Really, really good. How about this? Crescent rings. Crescent rings are large rings of crescent dough stuffed with some mixtures of foods. They can be sweet, like a crescent caramel swirl, or they can be savory. Typically, the dough is stuffed with mayo-soaked chicken or tuna salad. The classic meatloaf. Learning how to make your best meatloaf is practically a rite of passage for home cooks. Some people like theirs with ketchup. Others swear barbecue sauce. Can't you still picture the peas and your parents tried to hide in the slices of red meat? But it tastes like nostalgia. It might not be the most aesthetic food around, but it tastes like nostalgia. No, it's not just ketchup. You got the ketchup, okay? You got the ketchup, and you got the barbecue sauce. But there's also the savory meatloaf, which is made with brown gravy. So those are the kind of meatloafs that you can have. So, here's Chuck on WGN. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
My wife worked in the early 80s for the Department of Agriculture as a dairy plant inspector, and she said the government cheese was a American processed cheese, but she said it was made out of old cheddar that had been stored for years and years and was a really good cheese, and far better than anything you could buy at the time for a comparable product.
I'm not surprised by that, and I'm not being facetious when I say that I really, really enjoyed the government cheese that we had in the lunchroom at school. I did, and especially those open-faced baked sandwiches. I thought they were great.
Yeah, she used to bring some home, and it really was. Again, for an American cheese, it really was a good flavor
to
it.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Chuck, thanks.
Okay, you're very good. Thank you.
See ya. How about this? Icebox cakes. It's a cake that requires zero baking skills. Well, now you're talking. Icebox cakes are usually made of layers of cookies and whipped cream. You simply allow the layers to sit in the freezer, and overnight, bam, you've got a cake. You could keep it simple with vanilla wafer cookies and plain whipped cream, or you could. There are so many decadent varieties to try. Icebox cakes are easy and fun. How about this? Whoopie pies. Whoopie pies? It's basically a fun hybrid of a cupcake and a sandwich. Oh, all right. Two layers of rich cake and a creamy marshmallow filling mushed in the middle. The original whoopie pie is made with chocolate cake and plain marshmallow filling. But you can have any flavor you want, from ranging from pumpkin to red velvet. I guess I forgot that those were called whoopie pies. How about this? Banana splits. What's the easiest way to make a banana split? Show at the door. Dad jokes aside. Hello. This old-fashioned dessert. Wait a minute. I had that. Hold on.
All right.
What's the easiest way to make a banana split? Show at the door. See? This old-fashioned dessert is due for a comeback, but they're as fun to make as they are to eat. You can choose all kinds of fun toppings to pile on. Whipped cream, walnuts, chocolate fudge, the sky's the limit. It's bananas that this treat was ever forgotten. And then we'll wrap it up with this. 630 area code. Fried bologna. My grandpa was a cop and told me that they gave people in jail bologna sandwiches, so I wanted to go to jail to eat. Remember, if you're frying your bologna, you got to slice an X in the middle of it. Slice an X, otherwise it's going to bubble up on you. So remember to do that. You wanted to go to jail. And they do, by the way. They do. The one time I was in the Hooskow, they gave me a bologna sandwich. And that was at the Norwich police station, too. Very clean, nice. Here's a bologna sandwich for you. While your roommate makes bail for you. Boy, that was a fun day. Cherry Jello and milk. Grew up on cream cheese and green olive sandwiches. My mom would make mock chicken legs from Jewel. I love succotash. 2224 area code says, my mom made green pepper steak, except my dad got most of the steak, and we would get peppers and rice. And finally, Rick says, if my parents were going out for the evening, we always had either Swanson pot pies or fish sticks and tater tots and corn. My friend made a pizza and put salsa, Doritos, and sour cream on it. He then ate it like a burrito. We called it a just blanket because he only ate them and there was nothing else in the dorm to eat. All right. Fan of government cheese. That's me. All right, we're going to take a break here. News is up next.